Now entering Nerdist.com.
You made it weird. You made it weird. You made it weird. Oh, yeah. You made it weird. You made it weird.
Yes, you did.
You made it weird. Oh, yeah.
You made it weird with Pete Holmes.
Hey, weirdos. So this is going to be the intro that we'll use for all the episodes while I'm in Australia. So I'm going to keep it very short because it's going to get old very quickly. So anyway, here are the tour dates real quick. I'm in Melbourne right now. That's March 27th through April 7th. After that, I'm going to be in Los Angeles at the Troubadour for Live You Made It Weird on April 15th. 420 for the South Beach Comedy Festival. I will be in Miami for two shows on one night on 420. April 24th through the 27th, I'll be in Austin for the Moon Tower Comedy Festival. May 9 through 11, I will be in Calgary, and I believe that's in Canada. May 16th in Cleveland for the Grog Shop. That's one night. June 7th and 8th, I'll be in Bloomington, Indiana for the Limestone Comedy Festival. That's going to be a lot of fun. Support the show. Download a You Made It Movies. Hopefully by the time this comes out, there'll be even some new episodes out there. You just have to search You Made It Weird on iTunes, and you'll see some bonus episodes called, called You Made It Movies. And youmadeitweird.com, donate, get a t-shirt. That's a direct way to support the show. Or if you're ever going to buy anything on Amazon, a great way to help this program is to go to Nerdist.com, click on the Amazon banner, and then just shop as you normally would. And those part of those proceeds will go to supporting this podcast. All right, that's it. That's easy. That's a good intro for every episode. I hope these are good. With all the time differences, I would never know when to send you these intros. You have to send them on Tuesday to get third. Okay, enjoy. Lean on. Hit it, Katie.
Where am I? Here?
Katie, hit it.
Where do I sit, though? Tell me where to sit.
Oh, you're so pregnant. What a cranky
woman. What a cranky prego.
I was going to say bitch, but, you know.
We're not recording yet. Save it.
We are.
Save it.
We're all now. So
save it.
Save bitch for when we're recording.
That's right.
Hello, bitch. It was extra funny because I just put my earphones on, which kind of made it feel like the show had started.
It's very loud.
What is? You're number two.
Thank you, Katie.
Do you want a set of...
I got to turn your voice. Go figure. And I have to account for really big laughs. Okay. Your laughter.
I sound like Mr. Wilson and Dennis the Menace. Oh, Dennis!
I never saw that movie.
You're going to watch... It's a television show first. Nickelodeon.
I never saw any of those.
Black and white. Back in the olden times when children were black and white. In black and white. What are all these liquids?
Juices.
You got Green Machine.
Never had this before.
You know what? Can I ask you something?
Yeah. I'm cool with that.
Naked juice.
Yeah.
Worth its weight in good.
Yeah.
I always think of Don Draper pitching that. You know what I mean? He's like, it's not juice. You know what I mean? Like he turns the card over right at the end. It's worth its weight in good. You know? Anyway, the point, you're giving me zero. You're giving me zero.
I don't wanna,
and you're my improv
not
teacher.
Interested.
And you're giving me zero.
I'm a no anding this bit.
At least you're ending it. It's not over. Let me.
No, it just it's not. What's that called when it's anachronistic?
What do you mean?
Don Draper would never sell green juice.
Sure, he would. If Roger Sterling was like, we got it. Or what's the guy? The old guy's name?
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about? He's like, oh, Don. No, he's putting ketchup on his ice cream.
He's really British in real life.
Is he?
I think so.
You know what? He's really old. That supersedes all.
In real life.
In real life, he's very old.
Uh-huh.
They have to be a little bit worried. There's a file. Matthew Weiner has a file. Like, plot if dead. I'm sorry.
Whoops.
Whoops. I just offended myself. Here's the point. That juice, naked juice, mm-hmm. worth its weight in good, mm-hmm. has a pound of fruit in it. Okay?
That's what they say on the billboard.
That's what they say on the billboard that Don Draper in Modern Times worked on.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my question. If you bought a pound of fruit, apples and kiwis and broccoli, and I'm looking at the pineapple makes an appearance.
Sure.
If you bought all that, it would cost way more than what that juice cost.
Yeah.
So you juice it and all of a sudden it's not valuable anymore? Does that mean that the fruit was like rancid or gross or weird or misshapen, unwanted, unwashed,
the
unkept?
Pulp has added value.
You think, no, that would increase the, what are you saying?
I'm saying the fiber of the fruit.
Oh, I'm with you. You're just arguing the quality of the juice now.
No, I'm saying that's why it's more expensive, because if you ate a full apple, you would be full. Oh, you couldn't eat all of these fruits and spirulina and spinach and
you think they're selling the pulp root to like a baby food company, perhaps?
Maybe.
You think they're getting a little back?
What are they doing with it?
On the pulp.
I don't know.
You know, I just found out my cousin works for a supermarket, and he told me that all the cakes.
I don't want to know this.
It's not that bad. Okay. It's actually kind of fun. You're about to picture pigs eating cakes.
Pigs?
It's fun.
Yeah.
He was like, they sell barrels and barrels and barrels of like old pastries and cakes and fruits and vegetables.
To
everything
what?
That went bad to feed
who?
Hogs to hog farmers.
Why would you ever think that I was going to go to pigs first?
I said you're about to picture pigs eating cake. Now picture it.
I thought you were saying ahead of time that I would have gone. That was maybe my first.
I was prophesying.
You're about
to tell
you that
you're going to see that.
Because I'm going to describe it and then it will be in your mind.
Mm-hmm. Would you like another pair of earphones for your fetus?
She can hear through me.
Isn't that weird?
Yes.
Are you reading to your fetus?
My husband has read to her. I'm pregnant.
So, Lennon, I understand you're pregnant.
I'm 33 weeks pregnant.
Wow.
Yesterday.
33, the Jesus weeks.
Out of 40.
Out of 40. Whoa, yeah. That's super pregnant.
Yeah.
You are about to have a baby.
Yeah, yeah. It could be any day now.
Don't watch that episode of Mad Men. Back in those days, gave the baby a cigarette and a belt of whiskey. Gave the mom the same and called it a Monday.
The moms back in the day weren't awake for birth. They would put them out.
Is that true?
They would give them drugs that would essentially make them insane so that they wouldn't be aware. And then they'd have to strap them down. And then they just decided it was best to just put them out. And they would just get the baby out themselves.
What? Without contraction?
Well, contraction. And pulling and pushing and vacuum and forceps and all that shit.
Wait, who's vacuuming?
The doctor.
They still
not as much, but they still use it today.
What?
They'll vacuum suction the head of the baby.
No. They have a Dyson that's shaped like a baby head?
Yeah. Designed by that British bald man.
The first baby vacuum that doesn't lose suction.
It's medical grade.
Do you have babies lying all over your apartment? Finally, get those baby heads out. So they'll use a suck?
They can, yeah.
Mm. How are you feeling about
this? You don't
want
that, though.
Yeah, no.
There's nothing... You should just be able, honestly, to squat in the woods.
Or in a pool.
And drop it, like it's hot.
Yeah.
Because it will be hot. It'll be your degrees.
It'll be 98 degrees.
Yeah.
That baby's
probably hotter. And...
Well, the pushing.
Right when it comes out...
You shit yourself.
That happens at some point because you're naturally pushing stuff out of your lower region.
Glad I didn't break that to you.
The baby will come skin to skin on you and the mother's body temperature will go up or down to regulate the baby's body temperature.
You mean you'll meet the baby's temperature?
No. If the baby is too cold,
my body temperature will
heat up in order to heat that baby.
You can toast up that baby?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the most amazing things that I heard.
So you give birth, the baby's a little chill.
Yeah.
Well,
the baby's out. It was just in a salty bath.
It was in your vagina.
For so long. It wasn't in your vagina, Pete.
It comes out of your vagina.
Sure, through the birth canal. But
uterine lining.
Above it. Above the vagina.
It's above the vagina?
Mm-hmm.
But it comes out the vagina. You can't tell me it doesn't come out
of
the vagina.
It does come out. Sometimes it comes out through the vagina.
It always comes out of the vagina.
No, it doesn't.
Tell me, the vagina, are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah. Sometimes you have a C-section and it comes out. Come out through
your
vagina.
For a second, I was living in a magical world where I can be a grown man.
You're going to imagine pigs eating vaginas.
I'm doing it.
Okay.
What did she put on it to coax them? Oh, God.
Sweet.
Have you ever been... I remember when I was
Have
little.
I ever been eaten out by a pig?
Yeah.
No.
You always hear those stories. It's always a friend of a friend that had a dog that she was so lonely that she taught it to go down on her.
Mm.
I bet it would.
There's always that story in your chain of friends. I never heard that before.
You've never heard a story like
that? No, I guess I've heard the story of like a guy that dips his dick in peanut butter.
I remember, see, I had cats and I remember being really young and I thought about it. And then I was like, why would I want a sandpaper, tiny mouth cat job,
that
blow
job?
That
wouldn't feel
good. Cat's mouths look like staple removers. And then
they
you
do.
I'm pretty proud of that I thought
good.
Of that.
Just right now?
Yeah. I don't pre-write my cat jaw analogies. You taught me. You taught me Proverbs. Let's stay on Preggers. We won't forget to talk about Proverbs. Proverbs. You know.
Biblical.
Biblical Proverbs.
Psalms.
I mean, if you're going to fill a fortune cookie, go to the Proverbs. That's what I say. Nice little sound bites. That's what the Lord had intended.
I'm pretty sure the Lord knew about wonton-shaped cookies when he
wrote Proverbs.
Yeah.
He also knew that was his tweeting phase.
Was it?
A lot of hashtags in the Book of Proverbs.
Under 140 characters.
Yeah, I'm sure. You could do it. Hashtag boom.
This naked juice doesn't smell good, though.
It smells okay. I had a juice earlier that had none of the sweet stuff. It was all the green stuff, and it was gross.
Did you had it made immediately, like,
I made
fresh?
It in my home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
With what?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you.
I'm waiting.
This is fun. It's cucumber, celery, four stalks of celery, a whole cucumber. Uh-huh. Then you put in a whole thing of cilantro, a whole thing of parsley. Those are very detoxifying.
Okay.
Toxins, bad. Then you're going to put in like a whole fucking bushel of red kale and a whole bushel of
something. Red kale.
Red kale, real good for you. And then a whole bushel of something else, like maybe rainbow chard or maybe green kale, maybe black kale. If you weren't ready, here's a guy trying to sound tough about his juicing. If you weren't regularly juicing and you drank this juice, you would have diarrhea in real time.
Yeah, yeah.
As it went down your esophagus, it would shoot out your ass in real time. Same color.
And how much did it cost you to make that juice?
That's a really good question. Because if you think about it, what's a bushel of kale? An organic bushel of kale.
It's organic,
It's a real asshole drink.
Do you rinse every leaf?
Yeah, I do.
In a big, like, tub? You soak it? Or
I don't soak it, no.
You just rinse it, shake it out.
I rinse it.
Throw it in the Vitamix?
It's not a Vitamix. I'm losing my things that you were talking about. It's just juice.
Just a juicer.
So much faster to drink the juice for me.
But it's a mess to clean up, right?
It does kind of suck. The trick is, like so many things in life, you have to do it right away. You know what I mean? You make the juice
and
clean it.
You gotta do it right away. You really do.
You've never heard of girls getting sexual relationships with dogs? I feel like I've heard that story two or three different people in my life. And then the story always evolves like this. Then she had a party and there were guys there and she's been having oral sex with her dog.
Oh, like as a party trick?
No. A secret. It's a secret.
At a party she's doing
no,
it?
No, no,
you
no.
You hear about it at the party.
No. Then later the same.
What happens at the party?
So woman is lonely woman. Start with lonely woman.
Got it.
She
lots of those in high school.
Yeah. You know, there were a lot of vegetable rumors, dildo rumors, stuff like that in high school.
Sure.
This would be later. This would be college.
Uh-huh.
Girl taught dog to go down on her. Real good. Big sloppy dog tongue.
Yeah, because a lot of girls bring their dogs with them to their dorms. Keep going.
You blowing holes in the story?
No. I'm blowing holes. Keep going. Keep going.
I swear to God. I don't know what I mean by that. So she gets the dog to go down on her a whole bunch, and they kind of build this relationship. Mm-hmm. Now we're at the party. Lonely woman's like, you know what? I need to meet a guy. I need to stop having oral sex with my dog.
Sure.
Has all these guys over and girls. You know, she doesn't want it to be
her house.
She doesn't want to be too obvious.
Okay,
just
that's
guys.
The missing link to me, that it was at her house, right?
Yes, it's at her house.
Got it.
And then the story was that the dog would start getting hostile because it's the alpha and it has
this protective
sexual relationship with her. So it would see other guys and it can probably, you know, dogs are weird. It can smell his balls filling with fluids and stuff.
Sure.
He can smell an erection.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the main features of being a dog. It's like you're aroused right now. Both genders.
Mm.
Full of blood and cum or, you know, whatever that lady juice is. It's like Coca-Cola. It's a secret recipe. So then the dog would corner her and that's the other thing. The dog would corner her and insist, now I want some sex.
Mm-hmm.
I think she might have been doing stuff to its dick too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, how are you? Tell me about.
I think that might have been a boy fantasy story because I never heard that story growing up, and I went to church camp, so
that's where you would hear it.
Would have heard it.
And you grew up in, not to stereotype, but you grew up in like a regular place, like Alabama,
Georgia. Yeah.
Did I get that wrong?
Suburban Georgia. Metro
I just
Atlanta.
Feel. I just feel like those aren't like Manhattan stories. I feel like that's a good middle America.
Yeah, yeah. America, all Americana.
It's girl. An Americana.
Sure.
Guy fucking a pie, girl getting fucked by a dog.
Yes, yes.
These are, you know, I can hear the horns. The horns are blowing. You know that like pork, it's what's for dinner kind of horn sound?
Oh, the.
What am I thinking of?
You know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That there's a composer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going over like a cornfield and someone's like, America.
Yeah.
And you're like, same thing when you see the dog
Aaron
mounting.
Aaron Copeland. That's what I'm thinking.
We push in on the dog's orgasm face. It's like a Beethoven dog. Anyway.
Have you ever seen a dog have an orgasm?
No. Do they have? They must. I've seen cats sneeze.
Uh-huh.
That's got to be pretty close.
It is supposed to be connected.
Yeah, it's a similar area of your brain lighting up orgasm. Yeah. It's involuntary fluids shooting from something.
Right. Whatever those fluids are.
Could be secret recipe.
Uh-huh. Filled so, with cocaine.
You know, everyone back in the day. Is that true?
It's supposed to be true.
I know.
I should really know. I'm a big defender of Coca-Cola because I grew up in Atlanta.
You and Jess St. Clair. She loves a red can of Coke.
Yeah. She used to drink it all the time until she got her migraines, and then she had to stop drinking them because of the sugar and the caffeine. But I still have, like, they have a little tiny 90-calorie can that I call Shorty Cokes, and I like
Shorty
C's. I have one every... I'm not supposed to have caffeine a whole bunch right now, but...
I'm glad you said that. I wasn't thinking that. A shorty Coke seems like it would be okay.
Yeah.
I remember being home in, like, kind of a whiter, trashier part of Massachusetts. Seeing this girl who was so fuck off pregnant, looked like she was working for the Globetrotters. You know what I mean? Like, put this on your shirt.
Got it.
It was one of the Globetrotters. Sorry for doing kind of a typical black voice, but.
I met we had a Globetrotter on our show.
Did he sound like that?
No.
It could have saved me, but now I'm racist.
Well, you said it was a girl.
Oh, yeah. No, I was.
All right.
You had a Globetrotter on your show?
On our TV show, we did.
On BFF?
Yeah.
Well, and how was that?
It was phenomenal.
Can I just say before, because I'm not going to forget to ask you about that, the woman, I want to say bitch again. The bitch was drinking one of the big one from Dunkin' Donuts. Like the biggest fuck all finals.
Iced coffee.
The hugest hot.
Hot coffee.
The hottest motherfucking and filled with cream and sugar and she's chugging it. And it was just like, the baby's kicking like a motherfucker. I'm like, you fucking dummy. That fucking stupid ass baby doesn't have a chance. Now he's going to be wide awake for the horror.
Or he'll grow up to star in The Town.
Are we talking about Benny Aff?
Yeah, Benny Aff.
Casey Aff.
Becky Hall.
Becky Hall. Which one was she?
She was the girl.
In The Town?
The Town.
I love her. Yeah, I really like her.
She's British too.
Is she?
Mm-hmm.
All these fucking fake Brits sneaking back into our goddamn country and stealing our hearts.
That's right.
And stealing the good parts. Parts and hearts.
Did you ever see the
Ring? Ringu.
Did you see that?
I did. Scary.
Yeah. The Robin Hood. It's not Robin Hood. There's a trilogy of sort of thrillers set in England.
Uh-huh.
They're all connected.
God. She's even more beautiful now that
she was in that.
British.
She was in that.
Yeah.
And it was very disturbing.
She looks like a crane shot over corn with the America. Like she
does.
Very...
She has that all American look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But she not a lonely girl.
Grew up eating fucking blood pudding.
Mm-hmm. And jammy Dodgers.
And shammy Dodgers?
Jammy Dodgers.
What's a jammy Dodger?
Keegan-Michael Key just introduced Jess and I to this thing called Jammy Dodgers, which is a type of cookie.
Uh-huh.
And if you Google the Jammy Dodgers commercial, J-A-M-M-I-E Dodgers, spelled the way you think it would be, there's a commercial with a monkey playing the piano with a cookie for a hat. And he sings Jammy.
He doesn't
Jammy
sing.
Is the one I love. Yes, yes, he does. Yeah. It's the best minute 05 of your life.
Why do I believe everything's possible? With
you have
you?
To.
Monkeys are singing. Women are birthing outside
Get in
of
there.
Their vaginas.
Get in there.
I am so heartbroken. Well, I love her. I love that woman. If she's listening, I mean, you never know. You don't know who listens to the show. Maybe it's that fake British person.
She might be.
She's great. She was also in Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Which I did not care for.
You didn't? Mm-mm. I'd like to go to Barcelona.
To Barcelona. No.
Why didn't you like it? Because you're Vicky. You're a Vicky, aren't you? Only Christina's like that movie.
Which one? It was Christina.
The one that I'm gushing over? She's Vicky.
Oh, yeah. But she had it all in the vineyard or whatever.
I'm saying you need a good vineyarding.
I'm sorry, but if you have a whole year to just go spend time in Italy.
Yes.
Spain,
or Barcelona.
Or wherever.
Yeah.
You're not worth my time. That's...
If you have that kind of
strong
ledger.
Generalization.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? If you can go and wear a gauzy shirt and just drink wine for, that's what you
what
just do.
What if it's 3 weeks?
3 weeks, go for it.
Yeah. You're saying a year.
Come on.
No good. Tells you a lot about him.
What are your dreams, man? Get to it.
Just go to Barcelona and be.
No. That's not a dream. That doesn't count. That's what you wanted to do when you were 4? Go to Barcelona? I don't think so. I don't think so. Let's dig deep. You're just coasting. You're settling.
Oh, my God.
You have a trust fund. I don't know. How are you paying for this shit?
Yes.
Not okay.
And can I add to agree with you, even though I love that movie and I love the idea of going to Barcelona for a year, she's also doing photography, which I'm a big fan of photography and I love it. But it's right there with writing in terms of the dreamless dream, meaning you don't know what you want, and I sympathize. I understand. I'm not shitting on these people. I'm just saying, if you don't know what you want to do, but you're interested kind of in the arts, chances are, and I'm talking about the dabblers here, not you real photographers or whatever, so don't get upset. I'm talking about like people who are like, I don't know, maybe photography. And that's what she does.
Uh-huh.
Because not anybody can be good, but anybody can be like, oh, I saw smoke and a bird flew through the smoke. I don't know why this voice. And writing, too. Because everybody is... These are gateway dreams.
Sure.
I could be a writer. Because everybody has thoughts going. You're like, what if I wrote those thoughts down? What if other people read those thoughts?
Right.
Teacher.
And
I'm going
to
add to
it. Excuse me?
Teacher. Teacher is a entryway dream. It's a gateway dream. Because...
I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
I know you're a teacher. I knew you were a teacher. I'll make my case and then it'll be...
And then I'll leave. Just kidding.
No, I want
I'm
you...
I'm going to stay here with you.
Okay, thank you.
Your hand is really hot, right?
Yeah, I have really clammy hands. Ready? Is that off-putting?
I wouldn't have thought about it until you told me.
On the removal, did you notice a clam factor?
I wouldn't have noticed it had you not...
You don't notice till the removal. It's like pulling a blanket off
of you. Sure, but it felt refreshing.
It was?
I have a hot pregnant body.
You do. You got a lot of BTUs. You could power a third of the Matrix. Mm-hmm. Weird reference.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, here's why I think teacher is a gateway dream.
Okay.
Because everybody thinks about it. In my opinion, everybody considers
it. It's in your top six or whatever.
Because... It's every day. Every day you see teachers and you're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And all the grown-ups you know are teachers.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people who shouldn't be teachers, and now I am being kind of mean, but I'm talking about my own personal teachers, like the teachers I had. Like, you fucking suck.
Growing up.
You hungover motherfucker rolling in the VCR cart. You're a piece of shit. This isn't your calling. God love you. I understand. Life is hard. Death is harder. I don't know why rap lyrics for no reason. What I'm saying is... It was a Talib quality. What I'm saying is most people don't have the actual call to be teachers. And we all know this because when you think of your high school, how many people were actually good?
Right.
I just got an email from one of them and I love him. Mr. Warren Brown.
And what did he teach?
English.
Yeah.
He was great. And like a film class. He like made up his own class. He was the best.
So he wouldn't go in this category?
No, but almost everyone else would.
Yeah.
Like almost everyone else would.
Yeah.
Not all of them.
What if it isn't a gateway dream?
What if it is?
What if it isn't?
Uh-huh.
But it's when you get there, you just realize you're shitty at it.
Okay.
Does that count?
I'm open to that idea.
Uh-huh. I think it's a lot harder to be a teacher than people think. Because they grow up just watching their teachers just show up and give them dittos or mimeographs or whatever.
Sure. I don't know what any of those are.
Uh-huh. Or write on the board, and it seems like Xeroxes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Opened the book to the page.
Yes.
to the chapter.
Raise your hand. Let's read in a circle.
Let's do our projects on the seagull.
I would rehearse my paragraph over and over. I wouldn't listen to the other kids. What if there was a big word? Big moment.
When you were about to read, you would
if you read in the circle, if the teacher was like, we're going to read this out loud.
So you would count ahead to get to
I'd count ahead, and I'd be like, fuck, it's thick. Thick like an Omaha steak. And
the word or the paragraph?
The whole paragraph, and then I got to read it and make sure I know how to say all the words.
And so there would be no actual retention of knowledge.
Zero. Oh, God, I was not good in school, really.
Were you bad at reading?
Yeah, still pretty bad at it.
Yeah?
I love listening to books.
In the car, podcasty?
Yeah.
Huh.
Or on a walk.
All right. All right.
Now, do you agree with my gateway dream thing?
I don't think so.
Is it because you were a teacher?
I taught improv.
I know that.
Which was sort of a means to an end, I guess, at the time, but I really loved it.
Yes.
And if I could keep doing it now, I would.
Is that true?
I would.
That makes me happy because one time I told Chris Gethard, who we both know and love, like, you're the best. You're really, really good. I loved you. I love Zach Sherwin. Sherwin? No, not Zach Sherwin. Zach. He's on The Office now, tall.
Woods.
Zach Woods. I lucked out.
You
I had
did
you,
get good ones.
I had Zach Woods, and then I had Chris Gethard. Well, I did something which people should do, which is ask around. Who should you
take?
That's
what I did, too.
You got to do that.
Yeah.
Because you might... I used to sit in on other classes, make up for other classes. They could have been the most talented improvisers in the world, and you're just like, oh, you don't like this. To put it back to you, it broke my heart. I was like, Chris, you should do this the rest of your life. You have a real gift. And he was like, I can't do this the rest of my life. Like, why would you curse? Don't curse me that way, weird New Jersey. That's my Gethard. So you do love it.
I do love it. What? And I miss it.
Why don't you do it? You could do it.
I couldn't because my schedule is too insane.
I know. It was hard to get you here.
So I wouldn't be able to commit to... And part of the satisfaction is watching your students grow and being there every week for 8 weeks or whatever it is.
Yes.
In your case, it was like twice a week for 4 weeks, right?
Yeah. You had me level one and two,
I had intense... You did like a sort of an intensive situation.
Uh-huh.
Right?
I think so.
And so... It was, but that was a really amazing class, too.
Was it?
Yeah.
Mine?
Yes.
Or you just mean level one?
Your class was amazing, right?
Help me remember.
Who else was in there with you? Satya?
Satya Bhava?
Jill Donnelly.
Jill?
Michael Caine.
Oh, my God. You're right. Michael Caine?
Yeah.
How am I forgetting
EJ EJ. Kayuje. I can't say his last name.
Calouette.
Yes.
I still get occasional drunk texts from
EJ. Me too. Hey, my number changed.
You!
I'm like...
This dude is losing his phone every month. I got so mad. Can we talk about this?
Yeah.
Let's just talk about our class. Let's talk about improv. We won't forget to talk about preggers. I was so mad at EJ. EJ's a black man.
Yes.
And
the only black man in our class.
Well, see, that's, isn't that what I'm talking about? I was like, dude, you are funny, good looking... And I'm sorry to be frank, but they want more diversity, I'm sure. Like, teams would appreciate that. The theater would appreciate that.
If he had stayed in New York.
He could have been in the running for, we're talking Daily Show, we're talking SNL,
absolutely.
We're talking all that shit.
Yes.
And the dude had an ambition. Look, EJ, you'll probably hear this. I love you, buddy. Text me when your number changes. I'm not mad at you. I just remember being back then, being like, why are you leaving?
Well, If he wasn't super talented, it would be a different conversation, right?
Right, that's what we're saying.
He was very, very good.
We're saying he's very talented.
Yeah.
And it's upsetting.
He was naturally funny. Like, walk on, start laughing. Didn't have to say a thing.
Yes. And how many black people at that time were at UCB? Two? I can think of two.
Yeah. And there weren't a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why. So that was a good class. EJ was great. Jill was amazing.
Yeah.
And Michael Caine beat me at a freestyle rap battle. Son of a bitch. Like 5-6 rounds. Very
he's
good.
He's doing ASCAP now.
Is he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good for him. So that was a good class.
It was a
Did
good
you
class.
Have Bill?
And I have a little bit of a beef with you because in your most famous show ever.
Which one? Oh, Judd Apatow.
Yeah, you.
I said it to Chris.
Like as if it had happened in his class. And
it
was like. I got a little upset because I was like, how does he not remember sharing that experience with me? Because I was the one who asked the terrible question.
Wait, then I want, let's make this right.
I don't honestly remember
what question?
How it went down.
I go.
You were supposed to share two truths and a lie, right? Or something like that.
It was my understanding that you had us walking.
We had an exercise in class.
And the point of the exercise was the truth sounds different.
Yes.
I don't know how that applies to improv.
I don't know. It was in the book. It was a mimeograph that I had.
It was in your book, your Xerox, your right on the board. And you had us walking around, and I remember a couple of the weird ones. One was a lovely gentleman told us that he lost his virginity when he was 11.
Yeah.
And then that kind of opened it up. I remember Satya, I think, actually went after Bill. Don't worry, everybody. We'll bring you in on this. Bill is a sweet, sweet man and an older man.
An older man.
And I want you to tell the story.
As old as the guy in Mad Men.
Yeah, he's about him.
White-haired, like, gentle grandfather figure.
And a sweetheart.
A New York actor.
Was he?
Yes.
Ah.
I got emails for his work after that.
Okay. I have to imagine that happens a lot.
Yes.
You have to know something that as my teacher.
Yeah.
I remember one time we emailed and it was like getting emails from like Buddy Holly or something. It's just like so.
Someone that had died in a terrible crash. Specifically.
No.
Someone who was cut before their prime.
I should have said Bono.
Okay, that's better.
It was like getting an email from Bono because you and Chris and Zach were just like larger than life. You have to understand,
that's
and
so
improv
weird.
Teachers
I
listening.
I never think of myself like that.
I remember finding out that you waited tables at that time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I wasn't let down. It wasn't like,
that's
oh, she's
good.
A fraud. I was like, I just thought you were, you know,
whatever.
Next level. I still think you are. But like at that point, there was no more. I didn't need any more convincing. You knew how to teach improv.
She just kicked the shit out of me.
Really?
When you said next level amazing. Can you say that again?
Because I upped your adrenaline and therefore the baby's adrenaline.
Da-dum.
I now up the baby's adrenaline.
Da-dum.
Rattles and applesauce. Did you get a burst? No?
No.
Tell the Bill story.
You've told it, yeah. So you're all walking around in a circle. You're supposed to say,
and we freeze when someone's talking.
Okay, is that right?
I believe so.
There was another exercise similar to that.
The two truths and a lie thing.
There was another one where you walk. It's a group mind exercise where you walk, and then someone stops, and everyone's supposed to stop quickly.
Oh yeah.
So that might
I might be blending two things.
That's okay. So we're walking, you're not looking at each other.
Yes.
People are randomly shouting out things that have either happened or not happened.
Yes.
And Bill says,
after years of therapy, I'm still not sure whether or not my mother raped me. Now look, that's a tragic thing. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
We all liked this man. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit of an overshare.
It was.
The field goal.
There was a line. And I wasn't sure because as a teacher in that moment, I'm like, how do I address this?
And you're just a knucklehead like us.
I'm waiting to him like serve people beers, you know? So I'm like, how do I carefully because it could be true.
Yes, we don't
know. Or it could not be true. It
could also not be true.
But it
sure sounds true.
Felt true in the exercise.
Yes.
And I think I don't remember what I said.
I think we ignored it. And oh no, afterwards
no, I
you
said
something.
Something.
You said
I
something.
I would have said something.
You
but
said something along the lines of maybe you don't have to go that deep. And you didn't say it to him.
Okay. I made it a generalization.
Yeah.
Do you think Bill is going to listen to this podcast?
I think Bill is more of a ham radio guy.
All right. So we're safe.
Still laughing at my ham radio riff. It was a great class. You know what? Let's talk a little bit about improv. You take it serious. You're into it.
I am.
You love it as a philosophy and as an approach to comedy.
Yes.
BFF was written through the art of improv.
That's correct.
And you would teach it, so your heart is close to it.
Yes.
It seems. Is it beautiful to you? It's beautiful to me.
When done well.
And it can also be some of the most heinous stuff in the
world. It can be very difficult to watch.
When done badly.
Yes.
What annoys you more? Knuckleheads like me, that would be my problem. Scene hogging schmucks? Or what gets your goat in improv?
People not committing.
Is that it?
Yeah.
The breaking?
Not breaking necessarily, but like the commenting on the scene, the full, like you're in a scene, you're fully aware of the audience.
Yes.
In so much that the audience is aware that you're aware of them.
Yeah.
You're smiling at your jokes. You're delivering everything kind of with a wink.
Yes.
I don't believe for a second that you're who you're saying you are.
Yes.
Which to me is the whole point.
Isn't that like Friday, Saturday night improv?
No.
You don't think so? It doesn't have to be?
It doesn't have to be.
I remember seeing really fantastic improvisers who, given a drunker crowd, would get into your more like, I'm Terrence Flapjack, and I'm the inventor of the flapjack, and I want you to eat these flapjacks. And the crowd.
It does.
Like,
it does take a different. I remember when I went from doing Herald Night to, which was a Tuesday, to a Saturday night show with Ruben Williams.
Yes.
In New York, and it was different because it was a 10:30 show. It's, everybody's wasted, and so I remember the shift of. We could still do the intelligent improv that we were doing, but we would have to just sort of like guide the, like handhold the audience.
Right.
So we'd be like, ha ha. We'd be like, here, this is the funny thing. See, this is why it's funny.
Right.
It's funny.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, and then everybody would join in and laugh. Mm. But it wasn't like, you, I mean, you just have to hit it over the head a little harder.
Right.
But you could still do satisfying improv.
Right.
And it would still feel really good. And it was an hour and a half show. So maybe some of it was getting them used to what you were doing, and then the second half could be a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah.
I used to love being in, if I was doing the monologues or something, being in the green room for when the improv team is discussing how the first half of a two-act show
went.
I thought that was always so fun to see how you guys would talk about how it was going. I thought you were doing this, and when you did that, it was really great. But then there's also a certain degree of not talking about it where you don't want to jinx it and you just want to stay in that sweet like group mind zone.
Yeah.
Do you remember the powerful improv lessons that you got when you were learning, the things that kind of enlightened you? Like helped you understand what good improv was, I guess? It's a weird question. Let me answer first. Because hopefully this will help you.
Okay.
Unless you have one.
No, go for it.
In which case, just go.
You go.
But it's also a compliment, so get ready for your baby to kick.
Oh, Jesus.
Here it comes.
Yes.
I remember I was doing a scene. I'm Captain Talk Pants when I do improv. I love talking.
Are you talking about the voodoo scene?
Yes, we are. You remember?
Which doctor?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Which doctor? I wrote it down here.
It makes me really happy.
I've told you this before.
No, I remember it.
You remember?
Absolutely. You might have told me it. We probably have talked about it,
but
it made me really happy.
It was one of the greatest. It was one of the greatest. Because please interject is what I'm saying. I'm doing a scene, and I remember it was very funny. I wasn't having a hard time being funny.
No, you never have.
I appreciate that, but it was.
And you're going to have a successful run.
My baby
on
just,
television.
My baby
on
just
a television
gets,
network.
Oh God, I hope I have a baby. This better be a baby. Thank you so much. But I say that to say this: I did have. So I'm doing a scene, and it's being funny. That's why it's even more impressive that you like. Interjected because the scene was quote unquote effective and that it was comedy.
Sure.
And I remember I was just probably just not even doing a voice. And the guy comes in and I'm a witch doctor.
Yes.
And he's looking to cure.
Had you chosen that? Do you remember? Did you initiate the scene?
It sounds like something I would initiate.
Okay.
I like big things. Yeah. I was always wanting to be condiments in a refrigerator. I was that guy.
Okay.
I've several times, I think more than once, I've initiated that I was twins in a womb. I thought that.
Wow.
Because I wanted to do scenes where you couldn't do too much. I wanted to be stuck with one person talking to them.
Because that's safe for you.
It is that you're absolutely right.
Right.
I don't like big elaborate. I don't even like big open spaces. I also have a superstition about improv on boats. Just the suggestion that you're on a boat.
Uh-huh.
I don't like it.
Why?
Because you feel trapped. Even though you're always trapped, you can't leave the theater.
How is that different than a womb?
I know. I don't get it. I don't understand what.
Because there's enough room to do some kind of physical. You would be expected, were you on the deck of a ship, to do some sort
do
of physical.
Do something. Maybe I just can't think of what people do on boats.
You're not a boat child. You're
I'm not
a child
children of boats. Children of the boats.
I'm not either.
Thank you. That's why we don't go to Barcelona.
No.
So I'm doing – the game quickly became this guy has a simple ailment and then it's a complicated witch doctor he cure. Very, very simple. Very fun. I remember specifically I was telling him how to summon a bird to fly into his window, that it would break its neck, that he could then get the feathers of the bird. And as I'm doing this, like, funny thing, you're like, hold on. And it was so great. You have to remember you're Bono. And Bono comes up, you. And you go, you're a witch doctor. This is what you have to do. You have to keep
saying those awesome things.
You have to
things.
Keep saying, yeah, keep saying those things. You did compliment me, which is essential, so I didn't feel embarrassed.
Right.
But you were like, you have to mirror my body movement. And you stood just in front of me, and you're a small...
We were sort of scissoring.
We were scissoring a little bit.
Or spooning, I should say.
It was more of a spoon than a scissor.
Sure.
But I wanted to yes and, but I knew what you meant. We were close in the crotch. And I was right behind you, and you started doing this, like, whack. You were crouching, and you're, like, hitting the ground, kind of like a primate, and you're putting your hands up in the air and flailing. And I had to do it, too. And I'll tell you something. Since then, I'm still not the most physical improviser or whatever, or actor.
Yeah.
But since then, anytime that I'm challenged to do something, I'm like, I remember that moment. Because it was in real time. Mm-hmm, you taught me to be silly, to lighten up. Big stand-up doing improv problem, not being physical.
Right, right.
Standing still.
Right.
Relying on talking, painting pictures with your words. And you were like, no, motherfucker, be a goddamn voodoo daddy. And I did it. And now I have other friends who are improvisers who I'm kind of trying to coach them into doing more acting and stuff. And I'm like, I tell them that story. It's a great story.
Aww.
Good job.
It
Any
was
kicks?
It was a good moment. No.
Yeah. What's going on, girlfriend?
Son of a...
She's all right. She's chilling. She's chilling out. Yeah.
She's chilling?
Yeah, she's chilling.
Okay.
No, I remember that. What's surprising to me, though, is that I think that you have, because you're so tall...
Yes.
You have, like, all of this access to physicality that you... We're just not even using. And it was if he's already this funny just talking,
right?
Like, layer on all that other stuff. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Like, unstoppable.
Like your Kurt Braunellers.
Yes.
He's a hilarious giant fucking man. A little Hitler propaganda doll of a man.
Yes.
And Zach Woods, who we already mentioned.
Yes.
Also not afraid to be physical.
No.
I also remember a time, and I just want to hear your thoughts on this. I was at I.O. in Chicago, and I know this has to spark a million stories for you, and I'm going to hear them after this because I'm talking a lot. I'm doing the scene, and it's just a bad improviser. I remember all the bad improv scenes I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
I'll never forget them.
It's hard to let go.
They're violations. It's so bad. Uh-huh. You want to have fun. The microwave popcorn just won't pop, and you're just so mad at the person. I get so mad at them secretly. So I'm doing the scene, and for one of the amateur moves I think is mean. People do hypersexual. I've noticed that's a coward's move. Not to shit on it too hard, but people will go, if I have nothing else, I can always just hit on the person.
Right.
If I have nothing else, I can be an asshole. And this guy just started playing this game, and Io doesn't teach game, by the way. And he's just being a dick to me. And I'm like, come on. I remember he was an older guy. Part of me is like, stop loosening up your corporate public speaking by taking this class. I'm here to do this for real. And he was like, I was like, I got that business. I forget. I'm selling antique cameras in Indiana and it's going really well. I don't know why this is happening. It became like a brothers one-upping each other.
Uh-huh.
He was like, well, I sold that business and I burned the money. And I was like,
shut every door.
Yeah, I just couldn't.
Shut every door.
Every door.
It's like what I did to you right when the show started.
That's right, but I loved it when you did it because it's like a bit. It is a bit. Here I am stuck on stage with this man. And my teacher, her name was Jen, and I thought she was great. She, because I was trying to joke my way out of it.
Right.
She was like, no, you have to sit on the ground. She told me, she was like, you have to sit on the ground and let the weight of what he just said sink in and act like it's real. And it made me think of that when you said committed.
Yeah.
I had a really hard time doing that because it wasn't funny. It was sad.
Right. But sometimes sad stuff is the funniest.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. All the characters that I did in my show were all, like, the root of them, completely sad.
Really?
Yes.
When you did your one lady show?
Yeah. Oh, I love, like, the comeback. You know Lisa Kudrow's The Comeback?
I loved it.
That's so sad, but
it's
it is
the saddest,
the funniest.
Yes. It makes me cry, the finale. People have been pointing out that I cry a lot. I mean, I tear up. I tear up a little bit.
It's okay. You could cry.
Yeah, I could, but if I can't, if I could, I would. I can, so I tear up a little bit.
What do you mean you can't?
I don't mean that in a tough guy way. I mean, like, I have a hard time getting into the ball mode, like bawling. I haven't bawled since.
Since when?
Since the winter ball of
1993.
I don't remember the last time I bawled, but man. If I get a nice one rolling, then I don't think
a lot of people like really bawl it out for like often.
It's hard to get there. It's a good place to be.
It is every once in a while. You need it.
I'm with you that the comeback is so funny and meaner than The Office, even the British Office, mm-hmm. I think, and sadder. And that part where I can't remember, it's towards the end. It's almost the finale. Uh-huh. There's some scene where she starts crying.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Right.
So you love that sort of stuff.
But you've been given permission to laugh.
Yeah.
So you can.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how sad it gets.
Right.
It's still funny.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's, so where did you, are these real people you did, or are you making these people out of
nowhere? No, these are just all like the weirdos that live in my brain.
Really?
Yeah.
Jess St. Clair told me you have a knack for imitating anybody. Like even
she says that. I don't think about it. And if she puts me on the spot, I can't.
Yeah.
Really,
I'm not
going
to do that, by the way.
But if I've met someone for a second, or if I've known them all my life and I'm just repeating what they said.
Yeah.
Then I can hit it.
Yes.
If I'm not thinking about it. It's like when you get on the toilet, you don't think about peeing.
Right.
You just pee.
I think that's a very important creative lesson in what you're saying.
Yeah.
Is I believe some people's natural state is inability. They have ability there. So when they just don't think it's a something to feel pressure about, mm-hmm. or that they need to deliver or anything, mm-hmm. you can just do it.
Yeah.
I think impressions specifically are one of those things where people need to give themselves permission to try them.
Yeah.
Like I've said this many times on the show, but it's not just impressions. It's a lot of creative endeavors. You're like, oh, I just need to allow myself to not be that great at it. I think if I just greenlight myself a little bit more, I'll get better at it.
Well, you're never going to be great right when you first start, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess you are sometimes with certain things, but why would you think that?
Yeah.
You have to try it.
But in your comfortable place, you having dinner with Jess St. Clair in a safe place.
Yes, yes.
You can do it.
Yeah, the waiter comes over. There was an amazing waiter that we just, because we shot our pilot last week.
Uh-huh.
In Montrose. And,
hey.
And
congrats.
Do you know Montrose? You're like,
the Montrose L-stop?
Shout out to Montrose. No, Montrose, California.
Oh.
So like this little quaint little town. We flew to the L-stop.
To shoot it outside my old apartment?
Yeah, yeah.
That shitty pizza
place? Deep Williamsburg.
Yeah,
Bushwick. Almost Bushwick.
Yeah, it is. You know the deal.
Yeah, so this waiter came over, and I fully understood him. I don't know, but she was having a really hard time. He was offering her the sides, the things, and he was like, "Halsada says a full fries," and I was like, "Okay, I get it. I would like the fries, please." And she was like, "Are they regular fries?" I'm like, "Yeah, they're regular fries." She's like, "What did he say?" I was like, "House salad, Caesar, fruit, or fries." But I mean, when I just said it back, anyway.
Say it again the way you said it.
Asala Caesar fruit fries. And I was like, okay. I don't know. And he had this amazing way about it. And he's like, ooh, take the Tabasco, put it in a ranch. And I was like, okay. Like it was like this special treat that he was only sharing with our table. But I think that's because as he was walking away, he could hear us laughing, and he thought we were laughing at him. So he was trying to like get back on even ground with us.
Wait.
And then that made her really sad. I was like, but that's also hilarious.
Wait, he was on the show though. Or no, you were filming the show. This is a man.
This is a real man. This is a real man. He was a waiter at a restaurant in Montrose. We were there location scouting. We did shoot there, and I will go back and eat that man's fruit fries.
Gonzalez, he's a fruit fry.
No, he's a fruit fry.
Put the Tabasco in the ranch. I do that too. I have a hard time not imitating the people that mm-hmm. like cab drivers and mm-hmm, stuff. Mm-hmm. I had a cab driver pick me up from the Montrose stop actually, and I worked so hard on an impression of this man. I couldn't do it. But every time he picked me up, I was like, if Fred Armisen knew about this man, he'd have like a new thing. And then I was like, why don't I just take it? But I remember one time he gave me, there was an iPhone for sale at Best Buy, and it said no rain check. It was like a certain price on a certain day.
Right.
It said no rain check. And I remember it took me about 20 minutes, and I speak a little Spanish, to explain to him that that doesn't mean he can't use a check. Like some sort of rain check.
Oh, okay.
Because he's going to buy it.
It was confusing to him.
And he's going to buy it with a check.
That's, right.
That was also very clear that he was going to buy it with a check, that he made it obvious that, like, don't cash the check.
Was a woman.
Best Buy doesn't take checks.
There's a woman that my husband and I still today quote, who worked in Williamsburg in, near where I used to live in Brooklyn, who we would buy. It was like a little market. We would go there all the time. And we weren't living together yet, my husband and I. We were about to move in together. And they knew that we came in all the time. And so they were like, you're married, you have kids, you know. And we're like, no, no, no. And the guy was like, oh, you need to, you know, you need to think about doing that because, you know, you clearly love each other. And the woman was like, they don't have to live together to love each other. And we still quote her to this day. Like, just whenever you don't have to live together to love each other. Made me so happy.
Everyday celebrities. Yeah. I can't think of any, but I know I have a million. Oh, you're making me think of one. I had a waiter who, you know, waiters that just don't look like they should be waiters. Sometimes they're too young.
Yeah.
They just don't. They can't fill out the suit. It's like a fancy restaurant.
Like a real waiter. Like it was a like career a, waiter.
I think so. But it wasn't that nice of a place. It was in Rhode Island.
They had to wear a suit.
Yeah. But, you know, some of those Capitol Hill, it's not
I don't know that I've eaten at that many restaurants where a waiter would wear a suit that he wouldn't fill out or whatever.
Okay. Well, I also go to Barcelona for a year.
Yeah, sure,
I don't.
Sure,
but he comes up and it's like a red, like a burgundy jacket.
Sure.
And he looks like my friend Dave Drawn from high school. So immediately I'm just laughing at this man.
Oh.
Dave Drawn, great name, right? David
it's
Drawn.
It's a good.
It's a real name.
D-R-A-W-N?
D-R-O-N. David Drawn.
Like
I haven't
Tron.
Thought about it. Like Tron. Yeah, he was living in another world, too. He was a wild guy. So this guy comes up, and he looks like David Drawn. He just doesn't look right. He's wearing a he looks like a bellhop, but we don't have bags. We have menus, and we're making an order. And he has – I'm going to ask you later, the hardest time. One of the hardest times I've ever laughed in my life.
Uh-huh.
I'm at a table. It's too fancy for us. I'm wearing like a Red Sox hat. I'm like a child, you know, but I'm like 21. So I'm sitting there and I'm like trying not. Immediately I want to laugh at him for some reason. You know, there's someone.
Yes.
You want to laugh at them.
Yes.
He looks weird. He had like
really
a weird like goatee, you know, like barely grown in. And he was just too, he was wrong. He was wrong. And
Poor
he looked
guy.
Like David Drawn. He was David wrong. Yes, you're right. This is also kind of sad, I guess.
Yeah.
And he comes up and he's stuck. He has to do a monologue. He can't not tell us the specials because I'm laughing. This isn't Joe's Crab Shack. This is a night. He can't be like this guy.
Squat down and say flip over your card when you're ready.
Right. Exactly. Good pull. He has to do the specials. And I'm trying the whole time, and I'm very, like, just aware of him knowing that that I'm laughing at him.
Right, right.
So I'm like, get it together, get it together. I'm laughing, then my friend is also laughing. I decide I'm going to look at him. I'm not looking at him. I'm just shaking and crying.
Oh.
And then I decide to look up at him.
Oh, no.
Right when he's finishing, he's talking about one of those he's talking about one of the specials. I look at him. Eyes shaking, you know, my eyes are shaking. And he goes, and that's baked in the oven. And I laugh it flowed out of me. And I still to this day will, for no reason, go, and that's baked in the oven. Just for no reason. You don't have to leave them. I like
to love each other.
We love each other.
That was a woman. That was a middle-aged woman.
I like yours. I like yours a lot. there's a million places we could go because you made me think of a billion different things. Married. Impressions, baby. Are you going to have a natural childbirth?
Well, natural can mean lots of things, Peter.
Tell me.
You can have, I mean, natural.
You going to go to a hospital?
You could do it however you want it. You know what I mean? What's natural for you?
I guess.
To get drugs when you have pain? Or to struggle through? You know, whatever. What I have... been taking classes.
Yes, Lamaze.
I never really honestly thought about the process of giving birth until I realized like a month ago, oh shit, this baby's going to come out my vagina. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that is going to be, I remember I watched a 3-minute like tutorial, like maternity ward tour, because mm-hmm. I am giving birth at a hospital. And I just was like, oh shit. Cause I haven't really been in a lot of pain in quite a while.
Yeah.
I think.
Do you have another pain touchstone to be like, I did break my femurs?
Not to this extent.
Yeah.
I fell while backpacking with a 45-pound pack on my back a mile from any civilization and split open my knee on a sharp rock and then had to hike a mile. But they took stuff out of my pack, so that was better.
Yeah, I think.
But that was painful. That was pretty painful. But it was like a really, really bad cut on your knee that had to have stitches. So that's like.
And hiking on it.
Yeah, yeah. So I think
running
that
down
was.
Your leg? You bleeding down your leg?
No, they actually maxi pad electrical tape did.
Yeah. Good call.
Yeah.
Always.
Flush it out with water, all that jazz. But that was pretty scary.
Isn't it weird that that story people would still be like, yeah, no, it's going to be more painful?
Yeah, sure. It is. I'm pretty sure it is.
There's a part of your brain designed to make you forget the birthing process.
Yes.
Isn't that wild?
Or pain in general. Because if I were to say the specific pain I had when I cut my knee open, I couldn't tell you.
Right. It's the undo button.
Yeah, or the recovery after like having your wisdom teeth out or any other like surgery that you might have had.
Yeah.
You'd probably, after a while, don't remember the specific pain you were in.
Yeah, it erases it so you'll continue to hike and so you'll get pregnant again.
Right.
It doesn't want you to be
or
like,
get physical
never.
On stage.
Or just do a voodoo doctor, voodoo daddies.
Yeah, but I think the thing that and this isn't really funny, but I think the thing that I realized was giving birth is not, there's nothing wrong with me. So I don't want to treat it like there's something wrong with me. So I'm not going to the doctor because I have a cold or because there's a virus in my body. Mm-hmm. This is something that women have done for thousands and gajillions of years.
Right.
So you're going to go do what everyone else has done and it, your body is set. I mean, so far I had sex, right?
Yeah.
And then from there, I haven't done anything. Everything else my body's just been doing.
Yeah, you just activated a process.
Yeah. And so I can't imagine that's going to continue to happen to get the baby out of me. And sure, there could be things that happen that are not expected, or I could have high blood pressure or weird things could happen that I wouldn't foresee. And in that case, you would have to deal with it like there's something wrong.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. It's
that has to be the great comfort, right? That everybody does it.
Yeah. That's how you got here. That's how we both got here.
Right. I have a similar coping mechanism with death, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I go, everybody does it.
Sure.
Everybody does it. It'll be fine.
But we're not done.
We're not done yet.
No.
Not yet. And then we ride off on
a... We have a lot to do. We still have a lot to do, Peter.
I have a lot of questions. One is, you can answer any of these questions. I'll ask you 3 questions
okay.
and you can answer any of them.
Okay.
Don't tell me which one you're answering.
Number one.
One, were you, how Los Angeles were you? Were you trying to plan this in between things? Two, you have a baby in you that's constantly in a dream state. Uh-huh. Are you having weird dreams?
Uh-huh.
3, where's the baby poop?
Stored up in the rectum.
Is that right?
It'll come out.
In one big one?
In one big one. It'll be dried up, though, dehydrated. It's called meconium.
Meconium?
And it'll be black, like tar, sticky.
Isn't that what they were looking for in Avatar?
Yeah.
It's like the hash of shit.
That's what that guy with the weird legs was trying to get to. That is...
Old weird legs.
Yes, crazy dreams.
You are.
Baby is not always in a dream state.
I thought he was. You know why? Kumail used to have a bit about it. So it could be wrong.
Don't base your life
on Kumail,
bits. Please?
I will. I won't. I won't. I promise that I won't.
I love Kumail.
Oh, God.
I don't think the baby is now in a cycle of sleep and waking.
Yes.
Eyes are open, breathing in.
So he's just looking around.
Yeah.
It's like, look who's talking.
No, No, it's not like that.
But he was looking around.
John Travolta's voice is not inside my fetus. Gross.
So he does dream some of the time.
Probably,
when
yeah.
When he's sleeping, he's
in
dreaming.
The same way that, like, when you have a cat, when you grow up with a bunch of cats.
Yes.
And they're snoozing. Then they shake, you know, like they're right. running through fields or whatever. And
right.
you see them, like, you know.
But where's he running? That's the real Noodle Baker.
The baby?
Yeah, what's he, that was what Kumail's bit was about, is what is he dreaming about? The
because
previous...
there is nothing before that.
Unless he was in some sort of pre-life realm.
Which could be.
Yeah.
Very well could be.
Or he's just dreaming of colors and shapes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you having any baby dreams?
I had one of the most intense... I usually dream crazy shit.
Yeah, like, Jess St. Clair told me that.
Yeah.
What's going
on? Usually very violent.
Yeah.
And I'm a pretty calm person
I know.
Day to day. So, like, I have had, like, a lot of dreams where I find myself in sort of, like, a futuristic brothel. And people are, like, going to rape me. And I have to, like, cut them in half with a knife. But they just fall open. And there's nothing inside. And then they continue to come after me.
They're hollow?
They're not hollow. They're full of matter, but they don't bleed.
Uh-huh, like cutting into an eraser.
Yeah, sort of. But you can see the insides, but it doesn't fall out.
Oh, like a gut eraser.
Like a plate, like Play-Doh or something.
Like one of those fake sandwiches they have at Subway that
yeah.
lets you know what a sandwich looks
yes.
like. But it's made of plastic.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like those dessert trays.
I love those. I always want it to be just like that, and it never is.
Baked in an oven.
So, I just had
this dream, and it wasn't, I told the whole thing to my husband last night, and it wasn't, it's not a good story, so I won't, but it was very, very long, and at the end of it, the gist of it was that no one would know that I had ever existed, that my existence...
They'd wipe you out.
Yeah, like my parents didn't know where I had gone. I had literally disappeared off of a plane that I was traveling on with them. And in my struggle to get back to them, little pieces of my life were being taken from me. My ID, my credit cards, and then eventually like memories from my childhood were being usurped and taken and used as like being sold.
That's pretty crazy. That's some Philip K. Dick shit.
What's that? Who's that?
He writes all those trippy movies, sci-fi movies.
Like what?
Oh, God. Why am I blanking? All of them. Really, all of them.
You know what movie really fucked me up as
like
a child?
Like Minority Report is a Philip K. Dick story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
God. All of them.
Christopher Walken, early film, Dead Zone.
Hey.
Dead Zone?
No.
You ever see it?
Fucked up?
Super fucked up.
Trippy?
And for some reason, I saw it when I was way too young.
Oh, God. That's such a recurring thing. They did something on NPR about that. People that watch like The Exorcist when they were 8.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's fucked me up forever. Dead Zone fucked me up.
It was on the TV. It would have been on the TV. And I watched it on a Saturday, probably drinking NyQuil or something, you know?
Yeah.
And it was, this guy can touch you.
Yes.
And my hands are going to be clammy.
Mine are clammy. Yours are warm, very warm. Are you okay?
My face is heating up. I have a higher than usual body temperature.
Always?
No.
Mm.
Just because I'm
just because of the baby.
Because
you
I
got
have 50% more blood flowing through me right now.
Gross.
For the placenta.
For the placenta?
Yeah.
Are you going to keep the placenta?
No.
Why not? A lot of nutrients.
Some people eat it.
Yeah, put it in a soup.
Some people throw it out into the ocean.
Why?
Some people bury it.
To help the
it.
Jellyfish? Bury it?
I don't know.
What grows?
All sorts of special flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Dead Zone. Anyway, I just watched it recently and it was like a healing thing because when I watched it, I didn't see the whole thing.
Yes.
I just saw, maybe I did, but I don't remember. What I remember is two parts. A woman has been killed on a gazebo. It's snowing. Snow everywhere.
Mm.
And Walken comes up and he touches her.
Touch you.
Exactly. He has the same voice. He has the same comedic voice.
I got the voice.
He puts his hand on this dead woman.
Sorry, it's clammy. Clammy.
And he can see how she was killed.
Oh.
And the way that she was killed was pretty horrific. A guy walks by. Hey, Sandy. He comes up on the gazebo, hugs her.
Where only good things happen on gazebos.
Generally speaking.
Yeah. Engagements. Weddings.
I am 16 going on 17.
Barbershop quartets.
Yes. Rips her shirt and her coat all open and stabs her with a pair of scissors in her chest. Okay?
I was trying to go, but it, yeah. There you go.
So.
Oh. Why?
He sees in the vision the face of the man who did it.
Don't run with scissors.
It's the deputy.
Oh.
So he turns around. Huh. And the deputy's gone because he knew he was going to see him.
Oh, he knows he's a psychic.
So he goes home.
Why was he there in the first place?
Well, maybe he didn't believe it until he started touching her and he like got saying.
He got that.
You know,
it's the deputy face. Uh-oh. This guy's for real.
I know. Who did it? How do you say? I can't do
it. Oh, I can barely do it. Barely.
You're very good at it.
No, barely. I it was the deputy.
Yeah. Where did Sean go? So
he's
running off, right?
Sean.
So he's like, first of all, it's the guy from Picket Fence is the dad.
Okay.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Ah, love this guy. Mustache. Mm. He's a cop in a lot of things.
Okay.
He was. Love him. They all go to the guy's house. The mom from Anne of Green Gables.
When Christopher Walken opens the door, does he see the trees getting chopped down? No.
No.
Mass foresting.
He would be touching the metal.
Oh,
so.
That's right. Yeah, and that's always dead.
Maybe if it was a swinging door.
Maybe he opened it with his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway, the terrifying climax of that portion of the story. Now the movie continues on for another hour and a half.
Yes.
Is that he goes, he knows he's been caught. Sean, the deputy, knows he's been caught. So he kills himself.
Oh.
With the scissors. He mounts them on the edge of his tub. Huh? And he leans back.
Oh.
And he slams his face into it.
Whew.
Now I saw that when I was quite young.
Does it show it?
It shows it enough.
That you can get it.
You get it. And it's very terrible. And then the movie goes on and he's like, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. You know,
I can't. I need gloves.
And then he ends up having to because he foresees something even worse in Martin Sheen's hands.
Oh.
Anyway, watch it when you get. I watched it and I felt like I healed from it.
You healed because, correct me if I'm wrong, you watched it. Something that terrified you as a child, and you watched it again. You confronted it.
I did. But I watched the whole thing, too.
And it gave you closure on the story.
Yes.
And you also probably could wrap your mind around that it's just a movie.
Yes.
I do that with old things. I think that's very important. I'm big into that. I buy books that I had when I was a kid. Movies,
yeah,
all that sort of stuff.
I didn't do it on purpose. It was like I was in Toronto to do an improv festival, and we were just like hanging out in the hotel room, and it came on.
And you were like, I need to heal.
And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this just started.
Really? It had just started?
And we watched the whole thing.
You and Hub Stuff?
Me and my friend Jennifer Caldwell, who's an improviser from Atlanta that just moved to L.A.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. But I want to get back to your fucked up dreams. Jess St. Clair told me that you have a recurring dream where someone's trying to kill you.
And when I pop out their eyeballs
and
with my thumb?
Pop out their eyeballs.
She likes to tell that story. I don't think I've ever had that dream.
What?
But I have.
She said that you know how to pop out someone's eyeballs.
I do know how to do that.
Because you've done it in your dreams so many times.
No, not in my
Why
dreams.
Do you know how to do it?
Because that's, I don't know, something you learn as a vulnerable woman.
It is? From who?
I don't know. You learn about girls getting their genitals.
Yeah, when I was getting the dog talks, you're learning how to like step on a guy's foot and run.
Yeah, carry your keys in a certain way on your hand.
We've all seen that cover of that self-defense book. That's where we all got that.
But yeah, your eyeballs, I guess, are a super vulnerable place.
Sure.
You're also supposed to like act crazy or throw up on them or, you know, do something that would make it difficult for them.
Yeah.
You don't want to just like give in.
Did you hear that Oprah story about the girl, that a woman that was going to be raped or whatever?
Uh-huh.
And then the guy wanted her to go downstairs, which is a weird rape choice. I'm not trying to make light of rape. I'm just saying I've never heard of
go
someone
downstairs.
Being like, give me a blowjob first.
Oh.
Yeah. Not him on her.
Go down. I thought you meant physically go down the stairs. You were trying to say it sweeter.
I was. Blowjob. Woman
bites it off, right?
No, she doesn't bite it off. That's I think I understand that impulse. What she does is she grabbed
testicle.
The whole thing.
Okay.
Dick and balls.
Yeah.
And she said she twisted it.
Yeah.
From noon to six. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that the guy made it's such a great story. You should
on
watch
the
it
clock,
on Oprah.
12 to 6, 12 not to for 6 hours.
No.
Okay.
Not for 6 hours. But had him in this grip.
Sure.
And the man is screaming, she said, like a wounded animal.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was probably at least semi-erect. So that makes the dick even more vulnerable.
Worse.
It's getting going to get bursty, kind of like a pipe in a cartoon.
Uh-huh.
And the balls are all mixed up in there.
Sure.
And then she called the cops while she had this guy.
In her clutches.
In her clutches.
Yeah, she wasn't going to let him go.
And then held on for a very long time until the cops got there. And every time he like
do anything, like he couldn't, like it was so much pain, he couldn't like.
Every time he like tried to move or anything, she just twisted it more.
Hard.
It's the best 180 assault story I've ever heard. So you have
a
story
180 assault story.
You know the original concept of this podcast were people just sharing their 180 assault stories. So you. Here's my – let's just jump to the end. You have dreams where you're being attacked.
Yes.
In futuristic brothels.
Yes.
Or perhaps by a man whose eyes you gouge out, according to Jess St. Clair. I wonder – you're because you're into the medis. You're the person who told me about the medis, meditation.
Oh, yeah.
You and Jess St. Clair.
Sure.
And I wonder if you could get to a place where you could realize you're dreaming. We talk about this a lot on the show. It's, you know, lucid dreaming. Have you had any experience with that?
No.
Because that'll really dead zone you.
Yeah. If
heal you.
There might have been a time that I knew that I was dreaming, like in the dream. And there was one time, and I was trying to get my husband to wake up.
Hub stuff?
Yeah. Hub stuff. And I, in the dream, and I realized if I could get him to wake up, and he would know there was something wrong with me and he would wake me up and this would be over.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just was like, like these terrifying screams that were like sort of muted because they're not full screams because
you're asleep.
And he woke up and he woke me up out of it. And then I immediately started sobbing.
Oh God.
But I don't remember what the specific dream was, but it was something, you know, similar.
That's not
to
it.
That.
See, what my hope for you is one of the things that, and I'm going to keep this real brief because talking about dreams can be tricky and some people aren't interested in that. And
right.
Then we'll wrap up the dream part or whatever.
Okay.
But one of the things you can do, and I suggest you do, is like 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day, ask yourself if you're dreaming. This is a big thing. This is a big thing to like help you train yourself to like take control of your dreams. Because if you're having all these traumatic dreams, we're talking about dead zone, watching it as a kid, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Then the healing property of watching it as a grown-up, getting that closure. Similarly, recurring dreams can get some nice closure if you realize you're dreaming and then like, for example, the ultimate fantasy for you would be to like the guys are coming at you in the brothel and you acknowledging that it's a dream. And like what I like to do is yell cut. Just be like, cut, we're not doing this.
Uh-huh.
Stop approaching. Uh-huh. I get it. Scary dream. Good job. Like an improv scene. Like ending a bad improv scene and being like, good job, Vern. Sit down. I know you don't have any insides. I love that about you.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? That's like even better than getting your husband to wake up and less crying.
Except that. Well, I don't usually have the same dream over and over again, the same type of dream.
But if you train yourself through in your waking life.
But aren't you supposed to deal with that shit? Like, aren't dreams helpful?
It doesn't sound like yours are very helpful.
No, but I mean, I'm working deep shit out. I'm working stuff out that, you know, like a friend, I'm feeling like I need to protect them or... In this particular case, there's a baby about to come.
Yes.
And everything is going to change. And there's probably a real fear that my life will never be the same again, which it's not going to be. But those are anxieties that I need to work out, obviously.
Yeah.
That's why I'm having these crazy... Also, I'm not sleeping as deeply, so I'm having more dreams.
Mm. That's a fair point. I guess you could make an argument for you should hold on to your dreams and work out your weird shit and your weird dreams.
I should write them down because they're making a crazy book.
Yeah.
I'm a writer. I just like to dabble and write my dreams down and have everyone read
it. It's an exercise. It's an exercise.
Just, Just, but I mean, maybe someone would respond to that, you know?
Can we? Can we? Can you take me through? Because here's the thing.
I skipped question one. I can't remember what question one was.
Oh, no, it's okay. Okay. You answered about the baby poop and weird dreams.
Yeah.
And the third question was.
What's the first one? It's okay. We'll move on.
It really does.
When I listen to this again to see
how. You'll yell it out?
To see how I did. I'll,
you'll evaluate your own performance?
Yeah.
You're doing great. I wanted you, because, correct me if I'm wrong, improv, big pool of improv. Don't get me wrong. Huge pool of stand-ups. Most of them don't do anything, right? Percentage-wise?
What do you mean?
Long-term, make it their job.
Okay.
I would say, correct me if I'm wrong, in improvisers, even more, lower yield of people that are going. The thing that I'm trying to communicate to you is, like when I was in Chicago, most of my teachers were in their late 30s, 40s, whatever, and yeah. I love them. Brilliant, amazing people.
Right.
And I've said this on the show before because clearly it haunted me. They were also waiters. You know, getting older and still being waiters.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. I love a good waiter. Baked in the oven. God love you. And it's funding their dreams. So I'm not looking down on that.
Right.
But I remember going, it seemed to me that the improv area was rife with a lot of, as is stand-up, but it seemed like even more so, we had a lot of improvisers that are falling off, that mm-hmm. are or just would continue doing it as a hobby for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are. Mm-hmm. Let's make this positive. You're doing your improv, mm-hmm. and then you're waiting tables. This is mm-hmm. in New York, and you're teaching improv.
Uh-huh.
Then fill in that step for me.
From there to where I am now?
Yeah, from there to, like, I have to assume that when you got put on accidentally...
On purpose.
Uh-huh. I was so afraid I was wrong just then. When you got on accidentally on purpose, I have to understand, or I have to believe that is the byproduct of an agent.
Yes, it is.
How does an improviser, uh-huh. listen to my dumb question, but how does an improviser get noticed?
Well, I did it for a long time without getting noticed.
Yes.
And I think that's the problem. It's like, I don't think improv, for the most part, is enough. If your end goal is to do things that are not improv, if you want to continue improvising, go for it. Like, you will always, if you're good and solid, you'll get shuffled around, but you could probably always find, as long as you continue to get better and people enjoy watching you perform, you can perform forever.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not the end all be all, which I love improv, teach it, would live do workshops, it. Still perform live shows as much as possible. It feeds me. But at the end of the day, what did I want to do? I wanted to do comedy as a professional, and I wanted to get paid to do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, you're not getting paid to do improv unless you're on Tourco, and then it's only every once in a while, and then it's only $150. So mm-hmm. that's not enough to live on.
Mm-hmm.
So then... what is it that you wanted to do? I wanted to be on SNL
mm-hmm.
for a really, really long time. That was like the thing that I finally admitted to myself because I didn't. Growing up, I was obsessed with it. I was like SNL characters for Halloween. I was a Conehead. I was the Wild and Crazy Guys. It was like intense. I didn't go on a lot of dates, you know, because of all of that. But... like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do comedy, but I didn't realize that was an option. I didn't know that was a real path.
Mm-hmm.
And so I...
Conehead.
I went... I ended up... you know what I ended up doing was going as a favor to this thing called CAPES Coaching, which was career counseling for entertainment professionals.
What?
Yes.
CAPES Coaching?
CAPES Coaching.
Huh.
And I went as a favor... to an info session because a friend of mine was his girlfriend's company. And it was a 45-minute session. And in that, I like had a epiphany or an awakening. And it felt really good to just think about it from that perspective because I think before that I had not really dedicated time. I was like, I'm just going to send out headshots, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't feel like forward movement. And so... I fell in love with this woman, Betsy Capes, and her sister, Jody, who have this company. And they now work in, I'm really happy about this, in in cahoots with the UCB in New York. They teach classes there.
Oh, cool.
Because I feel like that was a missing piece.
Career counseling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, what are the steps to get where you want to be, essentially? And they teach this thing called Artists in Actions, and they had a thing called the Path Class. And I just did these one-on-one sessions with Betsy, which was like so phenomenal because it's scary,
What did that look like? How did that?
Well, I mean, I was doing a lot of bullshit. I was saying yes to anything that anyone ever asked me. I was spending a lot of time submitting to like New York Film Academy stuff. And like, if I want to be on SNL, like, what do I need to do? I need to get characters ready. I need to get impressions ready. And I need to be ready. And she was like, and how long will it take you to get ready? And I was like, I don't know, 6 months. And she was like, okay. So by this time in six, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we started setting goals, and then we started letting go of other shit that we didn't need, like all of those dumb side projects.
Time wasters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
It's so in you. You have to yes and me.
So I just kept, I started to do that. And before long, I had characters, and I put together an SNL reel or whatever. So when it came time to submit, I did that, you know. And in that, through that process, I also, because it was also scary to think that anybody would want to watch me do what I do by myself, and that I would be funny on my own, and that the things that are in my head that I've come up with on my own would be funny to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing I did was write the show, this one-woman show, 30 minutes, characters.
That's like the backbone of how to get on SNL.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people.
So I did that. And then I did that, and it was going really well. I did Showgirls in New York. I did a bunch of stuff that I was really proud of, and it was all going really well. No agent.
Mm-hmm.
I had a commercial agent off of this one crazy Solid Gold dance character that I did in a Real World show, which was an improvised Real World, which was insane. But so then I started booking commercials, which meant I could stop waiting tables.
How that, they saw you in the show?
They saw me in the show, but then...
your agent, this commercial agent.
Yes, but then someone else had to say, oh, my agent saw you and she thought you were funny. You should send her your stuff.
Oh.
They didn't reach out to me.
Interesting.
So I reached out to them.
So even then you had a comedian helping you, another person helping you.
Yes. So then I reached out to them. And then I had a meeting in it, and it went well. And then I started to audition for commercials. It probably took me a while to book anything.
Mm-hmm.
So then SNL sort of was elusive for me. I never actually auditioned. I did submit 3 years in a row running with a character reel.
Mm-hmm.
And
new each time?
Yeah.
Wow.
And everybody was like, oh my God, you know, this is you, this is perfect for you, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, yeah. And then I did, this is the longest story in the world, Peter.
I love it. I get so much shit for not letting my guests talk enough.
So
I'll interrupt you at any
moment.
I
did a feature film.
Yes.
A feature called Confessions of a Shopaholic.
Uh-huh.
And I had a tiny part, but I was eating lunch, and I was surrounded at the table by all of these amazing character actresses. Joan Cusack, the woman from Airplane.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember her name. She's in an Old Navy commercial right now.
Strangely erotic, that woman.
Multiple other women who were like literally they'd been working for years and years and years in comedy as character actresses. And I was like, oh, it doesn't have to be SNL.
Mm-hmm.
It could be anything. It could be all of this. This is so fun what I'm doing right now. I just want to do this more.
You just want to do comedy.
Yeah. I just want to do this. And the SNL life is so crazy and it's very hard. And by that point I was already like in my early 30s, like, and it's a 7-year contract and I'm going to be almost 40 by the time.
Right.
I'm on that show. And then, so I was like, but it still was always a dream, always a dream. Mm-hmm. So I took my show to LA and I did I think Jason Mantzoukas was really urging me.
How's it going, Lennon?
Is that your Mantzoukas voice?
Good to see you. Yeah, it's me, Mantzoukas. I don't know. I can't eat eggs. I can't eat them. Do you have any white shirts? You have a white shirt? I'd love to wear a white shirt.
It's no good. It's more Mark Wahlberg, really.
It's good. It's Andy Samberg as Mark Wahlberg.
Ah, fuck him. Just because he did it, too. This is so good. So, Mantzoukas.
So, yeah. So, he was like, and I think he said to me at one point, like, is that really what you want? Do you want to be on SNL for 7 years, live in New York, never see your husband? You know, yeah, it's your dream, but like, think about the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And also, there's other ways, you know, there's other ways to do this. So, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Go to LA, do my show. Saved up all the favors that I had ever, like, I didn't ask people for things generally. I didn't send them an updated
postcard,
you know, newsletter.
Yeah.
So when I got to LA to do the show,
the one woman show,
I had a lot of favors to cash in.
Time to call them in.
Yeah. So I did that. And I did my show to a sold out house full of agents.
Mm.
And for the first time ever, had 3 or 4 agencies like interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
And then that shit was crazy because it was like being dating like multiple guys, which I did that for 1 week and I hated it.
Right. Are you fucking CAA?
Yeah. Hard. Anyway, yeah, and then that's when I started getting the real auditions, but I was still living in New York. I went back and forth for 2 more years, and that was that next spring. I booked a pilot before accidentally that was the Always Sunny guys. They did a thing called Boldly Going Nowhere, which was The Office instead in space, kind of. And it was just a blast. It was like Tony Hale was in it, and I got to improvise a lot, and... And that was crazy. And then, but that didn't go forward. And then I got accidentally as well. And so I was like, okay,
at pilot
this
season,
is happening.
You went out.
Yeah. But guess what I did that next summer? Submitted a tape for SNL.
Really?
Yes. Because you know, mm-hmm. that's what you want. You always want that. And if it's always in there,
yeah.
you know.
You know, I'm struck with the idea that, like, first of all, I'm about to contradict myself. I'm a big believer in specific goals, mm-hmm. okay? It's nice to have specific goals. But then, so when you said I admitted to myself that I wanted to be on SNL, I was mm-hmm. like, oh, that's perfect. That's a huge moment. Everybody that I talk to that's gotten yeah. somewhere that they wanted to be
yeah.
talks about a moment, or most of them talk about a moment mm-hmm. where they greenlit their own dream, where they were like, that's what I want. I'm going to go for it.
Right.
That's the plan.
Right.
If you're like me, you take a minute to picture it. You see your stupid SNL thing where you're eating fried clams and you turn to the camera and you drop the clam and you laugh and it says Lennon Parham.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You see it and you believe it and you get it. Uh-huh. You're backstage, you're Bobby Moynihan who cried when they announced his name the first yes. time. I love that story. So you think about you doing that instead yeah. of being like, oh, that's for others. That's something that I will inherit as well. That's my yeah. inheritance. I'm going to claim it.
Yeah.
So I believe in that. I'm a big believer in that. And in getting the show that I have, for example,
yes.
people are like, is this your dream? And the answer is it is. It exactly is. But also, you don't allow yourself fully to have just that dream, I suppose, because if you only go, I want to be on SNL, mm-hmm. you know if you didn't get on SNL sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so when you're at the table with Joan Cusack and all those, and the mm-hmm. woman from Airplane that I'm strangely turned on by, you need to like realize that your goal is really comedy,
mm-hmm.
that you're in the service of comedy, mm-hmm. that your true goal is to have a body of work
mm-hmm.
and you want to create the art that you don't see without you.
Right.
So SNL was the vessel that you understood, kind of like we were saying about people with teachers. You see SNL. SNL is something your parents probably were aware of and acknowledged mm-hmm. and encouraged, so you have this emotional tie to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the same thing with Conan. My parents know who these late night hosts are, and they know who Conan is. That's very mm-hmm. important. But then, like at a certain point, in your case, you're shifting it from that to other mm-hmm. tremendous
yeah.
things.
Well, I think two things.
Mm.
I think once you are, well, first of all, I would have never. As a sixth grader said, I want to executive produce, write, and star in my own television show on NBC.
Exactly. Yes.
That was not even a possibility to me, honestly, until Jess and I sold the show.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You didn't believe it until.
No. And Did I think we had a singular voice and that we were funny? Yes. That's what you need to know before you get to that place. You need mm-hmm. to know deep in your heart that you're worthy of this mm-hmm. and that you're really funny mm-hmm. and that you believe in that no matter what anyone says.
You have
says.
A voice and you have something. They have the cake pan and you have the batter. You can fill it. You got it.
Yes.
Slow
yes.
pitch, over the plate. You can hit it. You've been hitting hits all your life.
Yes.
And then you get the shot.
So you got to know that. But I think what people don't understand and what I try to, when people have said to me, like, how did you take these steps or whatever? Mm-hmm. You just have to be going somewhere and you have to believe in wherever you're going and you have to be fully committed to that mm-hmm. in the same, it's the same as an improv scene.
Mm-hmm. Commitment.
So you have to. And once people see that, they want that. Like, they want to be like, holy shit, she's on a train somewhere. Mm-hmm. I need that. Where she seems like she's happening. Or, right. you know what I mean? Like, things are happening for her. I need to be a part of that.
It's
I want to taste that. They're so excited about what they're doing. Thank you. You know, that sort of thing.
It's certainty. You're certain that you're on a train. And then people are also drawn to that
yeah.
in career ambitions, where it's yeah. like, when you're pitching BFF or you're trying to get that opportunity, mm-hmm. there's a certain degree of certainty. People don't really like cocky people. Mm-hmm. I've said this on the show before, but they're drawn to certainty in comedy yeah. and also in like a pitchy sort of situation. Mm-hmm. Do you talk about that a lot? What happened with BFF? I'm sure people are going to wonder if I'm going to ask you about that.
Which part of the beginning or the end or the middle or the first sixth of it?
I only want to talk about what happened with Adam Pally. I'm just kidding. I saw the first version of that. I met with you ladies. Yeah. That was so fun. I was so happy for
Yay.
You. I remain happy for you. And you're doing a new pilot in Moldova, is it?
Montrose.
I thought it was Moldova.
Moldova, a stop on the L train?
Yeah. It's the last stop. It's rough. It's a bad neighborhood
it's
in a way.
It's where you have to go to get your UPS package, though.
Why?
If your J. Crew shoes, they won't leave them at your front door.
Oh, God.
You have to go to Moldova.
When I got packages off in Bushwick, they just didn't arrive. Greatest luxuries of my life. It would be stolen. You were just buying the local homeless man. I used to order them in his size and just be like, go ahead, Purple. We called him Purple.
Oh.
He looked purple.
In his face?
Yeah.
Or in his feet?
I'd never seen his feet, but I have to assume his feet turned into like one shape, no more toes. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like a scary monster man.
Yeah.
Named Purple. What was I saying? Let's talk a little bit. I've never talked to you about BFF.
Yeah.
So let's have me talk about.
Okay.
With you about BFF. I mean, so you're on accidentally on purpose and Jess and Claire and you are good friends. And then when did the opportunity to pitch something come? Where'd that come out of?
Well, we wrote something for HBO before we wrote the BFF. So, mm-hmm. We actually had sold an idea to HBO the fall before.
Wow.
I got on accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
But we were both on other shows. So we were writing. And it was a year and a half of development with HBO because they have no timeline. And they have a bunch of stuff in development. Mm-hmm. We thought that was like, we've done it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we, the day that accidentally.
What was that show called?
What?
The show you saw.
It didn't have a name.
The Untitled
Parm St.
Really?
Clair.
Been 90 minutes? Doesn't it feel like we just started? Am I crazy?
No.
I feel like we just started. This one has gone faster than any other one.
Ever?
Ever, for sure.
Oh, my God.
Because I was just like, I haven't looked at the clock, and I was like, I'm pretty sure it's been 40 minutes. Okay. So please continue.
Yeah.
Untitled Lennon Parm.
So we wrote this thing for HBO. We were writing this thing for HBO. She mm-hmm. was on In the Motherhood. I was on Accidentally. Her show got canceled. My show got canceled. They passed on our script like within months of each other.
The hat trick of grief.
Yeah. So then I was like, what the fuck, man? I have like 1,000 irons in the fire and no job. Mm-hmm. And I just moved my husband out here.
Yeah,
you know,
you can't eat irons.
We've just decided. Mm. Yes. They would burn your mouth.
Yes. So hub stuff.
North
comes
and
out.
South style.
I'm going to picture. I've never met your. I have. Have I?
Yeah, probably.
I'm going to picture him as kind of like a galoot in a robe, and he's scratching his butt. This just makes it a better story for me. He's drinking milk out of the carton.
Like Gaston, like, or?
Yeah, okay.
What's galoot
no
mean?
No one. Gaston's more of a alpha villain.
Uh-huh.
Galoot's more like Tony Soprano, kind of in the morning with the robe.
Sure, sure.
And he's like, what are we doing out here? You moved me out for your show business. And he's eating cookies.
Except that my husband is...
also in show business?
A high school principal.
Oh, shit. Now I'm picturing Dennis Haskins. All right. So you move out hub stuff.
Yeah. So move out hub stuff. Get here. Jess and I are already working on our next idea. We come out the week to look at our apartment to find a place to live. And we are pitching to production companies. We decide to work with Ravi Nandan and Scott Armstrong at American Work. Phenomenal.
I know them.
Scott Armstrong, creator of Old School and other...
Oh, yeah. Writer of Old School.
A Road Trip. And
he wrote, "We're Going Streaking." Will Ferrell, parentheses, yelling, line, "We're Going Streaking," 3 exclamation points. He wrote that in his apartment.
Hangover 2?
Hangover Part 2, he wrote.
Uh-huh.
So he wrote, then he's in the elevator.
You see his tiny penis coming out.
You see a tiny dick.
Flicked by the monkey.
On the woman?
Man. You have not seen Hangover 2?
I have. They don't call it Bangkok. They don't call it Bang Pussy or whatever because he has a dick. Ed Helms fucks a dude in that movie.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of that.
No, I'm talking about...
little Thai dick.
Okay. We're moving on.
It was like...
So anyway, we decided to work with them. They have a first look deal with NBC. NBC gave us a blind script deal. Mm. They already knew us. In fact, Renata had seen my one-woman show and knew Jessica as well, of course, because everybody knows Jessica and how awesome she is.
Mm-hmm.
So then we were writing for them, and we go through a normal pilot sort of process for that, except that it's a blind script deal, so... we could write whatever we want as long as they're cool with it. So we had to come in and pitch it. And thank God they liked it. And it was the Best Friends Forever idea. And then we write it. January comes. Pilot pickups are happening. Our script was in the top, 14 comedy scripts that made it to the new president's desk. Because there was a brand new president. And after everyone read our script, they left.
What do you mean?
It could have happened the opposite way in that they got the script on their desk, they were let go or they left, and then it never went further. But usually what happened was they read it, they loved it, they passed it on, and then they left.
Mm.
So anyway, it worked out. So he read it. He was like, this is a great script, but it doesn't have a hook, really. He was looking for lots of things with hooks like Whitney and Smash.
Mm-hmm.
And, so the people that we were developing with said, who were big fans of ours, really nice. They said, well, you know, the girls who wrote it intend to star in it. And he was like, oh, are they stand-ups? And he was like, no, they're improvisers. Why don't you let them do a table read for you? Because they're, you know, live is like how we shine. So we had the most stressful table read of our lives.
Oh my God.
We went into the Parenthood trailer and they did us hair and makeup so that we didn't look like the rats that we normally look like. We look like we belong on television. We called
who are those rats going into the Parenthood trailer? Ooh, look at those ladies walking out of the Parenthood trailer.
That's right.
That's right, madam.
And then we called in favors for the table read.
What do you mean?
Chris Pratt read the Joe part, Jake Johnson read the Ravi part, Paul Scheer, phenomenal at stage directions.
Did he do good stage directions? That's an important role.
Yes. Nick Kroll read auxiliary parts.
I'll read the auxiliary. I'm trying.
It was great. And I believe he did. I might have been blurring that with another table read, but anyway, it went.
I was there. I was there, Lennon. God, my pants are baby blue. These are boat shoes.
That's pretty good.
So it got better.
That's pretty good.
It was okay. Go on.
Table read went great. We, you know, nailed it, if I do say so myself.
Yes. You could tell in the room.
Yeah. It's more about selling the two of us, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So
into a futuristic brothel.
Yes. Please buy our wares. So then when it was the most stressful week of our life waiting. The next day they picked up three shows, comedies. The next day, nothing. The next day, three more, bringing their total to 10. They'd told us that they were only going to pick up 7 to 10 comedies. So I called Jess. I was like, it's over. And then we got a call from one of the higher ups at NBC that said, we've spent our entire budget except for $500,000. Could you do anything with that? And we were like, are you kidding me? We do this for free in a basement under a grocery store. Usually. Yes. Yeah. Give it to us.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, yeah, you can do, you know, a couple minutes, whatever. We're like, fuck that. We're doing a whole pilot. We have to. We're going to be screened against these $3 million pilots.
Yeah.
So we built this team, this amazing team of people that knew, like Fred Savage, of course, came from Party Down and Always Sunny. He worked on all these crazy budgets and got a DP from the indie world and a production designer from the indie world, people that knew how to work for cheaper but make it look phenomenal. They screened the pilot with all of these other shows. Then they told them afterwards that it was only $500,000, and everybody lost their minds.
Whoa.
And it got picked up for 6 episodes mid-season. So that's in May. So we go to the upfronts and all that's crazy, which is where all the advertisers come to buy things. And it went really well. Everything good. We started writing our writer's room in October.
Did they give you $3 million?
No.
They gave you more?
Yes.
Thank you.
We still were budgetarily challenged, in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't getting 2.9 an episode like Up All Night or something.
Sure.
But, you know, it's me and Jessica, not Maya Rudolph, Will Arnett. And
right. And that baby's Chapel-gates. Made of gold.
So we produced... So we wrote all fall, and then we shot January, February, and then we aired in April, right behind Betty White's Off Their Rockers, which I'll say I didn't think was a great pairing.
Not a good lead-in.
In between Betty White and Brian Williams, stories about euthanasia. I love Brian Williams. He's very funny. He's done Ask Cat a bunch of times.
Yes.
But it was not a good place for us.
Yes.
But there were no other options, really. We had about 2 weeks of promotion. We had crazy fans on the internet. Twitterverse. We did a bunch of podcasts. We did a bunch of press. We hired a press person, publicist. They call those in the biz. And tried to turn it out, you know. We got terrible ratings. And they kept going down. But we have this like sort of rabid... We didn't have network numbers. We had solid cable numbers. And we have now this amazing, rabid, like what I call the smart girl nerd, like secret nerd fan base who are being underserved. There's nothing on television for them. It's not girls. It's not community. I don't know what it is. Maybe it is those things too, but there was something about our show that
spoke to them.
Yeah.
Got them going.
Yeah. And people got obsessed. And people are still tweeting us like...
Did you sell the first season? Like a box? Like a 6 disc?
No. You can get it on iTunes if you want to have it forever. Or you can watch it on Hulu for free.
Oh.
Or on the NBC website. It's still up there.
Okay.
All 6 perfect episodes.
Did that ever work? The Save BFF campaign? Like, not yours.
Yeah.
I know yours didn't work, but has that ever worked?
I remember... For some series, yeah.
It has, okay.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good. I was hoping
like
it
there
would
was
work.
Something...
for you guys.
There was something where people rallied and sent a bunch of red vines to, like, a network or something. Maybe for Chuck. I think Chuck had a really... And Community, too. People just went crazy when they were going to turn it off. But I feel like people didn't know about our show, you know? And if they had, anybody that watched it loved it.
Yeah.
Very, very few people said anything mean about it. All the reviews were phenomenal. And the good news is now we have 6 episodes because the development process was phenomenal and we loved it. And the show that we put on the air is the show that we wanted to put on the air. And we're really proud of that. And I think working under the radar really worked in our favor.
right.
in that way.
Because now you have the body of work. Because
now we have these six perfect episodes that we're so happy with and we can use as examples of our work, which is...
What took you to Moldova?
Yeah.
Tip for your next thing.
That's right.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah.
Got you to the next thing.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
Story's not over.
Keep going, guys.
Yes.
When everything gets a fan, just keep on going. Right, guys?
Yes.
Get on that train.
Every day. Oh, that's great. I feel adequately BFF'd.
Yeah.
Do you?
Is that a good
yeah.
summary of it all?
I loved it. I didn't know a lot of that. Don't care for that Luka Jones, though. I'm just kidding. He's such
He's
a nice man.
He's a real jerk ass.
He's no Adam Pialy. I'm just kidding. I just wanted to
Both
say Pialy. Pialy
did us a real solid doing Pialy. The pilot.
Yeah.
And we were actually shooting it when Happy Endings premiered. That's how the timing worked out.
Ooh.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Hard working. We were really, really lucky.
Hard working SOB.
Him. And then found Luke's.
Yeah, Luke's is great. We go to Tender Greens sometimes.
Do you?
Yeah, we eat salads.
I was thinking about eating that later.
It's a good place to go.
It really is.
I would get tuna, but then you got to worry about the Merc for the babe.
You can have 12 ounces a week.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you want it to be these 12 ounces?
Can't have albacore. That's true.
Yeah.
I don't like, you have to have it fully cooked.
Is that right?
That's the other thing.
No fun. You can't have raw milk. Can't go to, don't go to France. Eat the cheese. You'll be fucked.
I'm not going anywhere near fucking Europe. Just kidding. I like Europe. I minored in French.
That's what I know.
I'm not going to go spend a year there just like sucking on the cow's teat.
I would like to go to Paris with you. I would like to buy you a margarita.
It's Javier Bardem.
I know who it is.
Oh, thank you.
I knew exactly who it was.
I just feel like if we had a chance to go to Paris for a little bit, that
I'm really pleased with you this. It's sounding really good to
me. You know the other... tap into this version of him.
What? Which
one? Eat, Pray, Love.
I didn't see it.
Doesn't matter. Just... you don't need to know anything.
Did you leave your life behind so you could eat in a restaurant with me and maybe have sex with my linen shirt? I'm kind of losing
you
it.
You nailed it.
Did I?
You just nailed it. That's what that movie is.
Are you a frustrated housewife with a dry vagina who came to Europe in order to moisten it with the secret ingredients of Coca-Cola? And that's baked in the oven.
Not everybody wants a child. I can't do it. I can't do it.
Not everybody wants a child.
That's good.
It was okay. I feel like I'm losing it. Every once in a while, it's kind of like a kite starts slipping out of your fingers.
I would like to go to Orvieto with you.
Orvieto?
Orvieto. It's a small island. I will fly a plane.
Very pleased. Very pleased. We are running out of time. Not really. But we should get into this before you have your baby.
What? What do we got to get into? What are you going to get up into?
We have to talk about love, and then we have to talk about God, and then we end with the game.
Okay.
We could do the game now. I'm just kidding. You're married to a high school principal?
Yes, that's right.
And how'd that happen?
I was a teacher.
You've known him a long, long time.
I taught high school in between college and coming to New York to do comedy.
And he was your principal?
No, he wasn't a principal at the time. He was still a teacher. I worked for... I'm going to try to do a short story version of this.
Because
I feel like I've been telling long stories. But
no, I like your stories. I like them a lot.
I moved to New York.
Yes.
Got a job working for the New York City Teaching Fellows, which is a version of Teach for America, which I had been doing in Mississippi.
Fantastic.
And I was an advisor to 30 incoming teachers.
Yes.
And he was in my class. And I thought he was super foxy from the get-go.
Foxy? What kind of man are we talking about?
He's...
give me a breakdown of this man. How's he dressing? Good
he
dresser?
He grew up in Brooklyn.
I'm picturing corduroys. Grew up in Brooklyn.
Born in the Dominican Republic.
Born in the DR.
Gentle, kind, super intelligent.
Oh.
A little shy.
No.
Yeah. I love him so much. He put a baby inside of me.
Yeah, he did.
His
sperm's not shy. They ran right up there.
They know what to do. They always know where to go.
Yeah, they do.
Knock, knock.
Hello.
Is there any eggs here?
So he's a sweet, shy man from the DR.
Wonderful, with a large awesome family that we're all in Brooklyn.
Not where I thought that was going.
Anyway, he was in my class, and I had a crush on him, but I didn't ask him out because I worked for the people that also employed him. And then eventually I didn't work for them anymore. And then I had a cider and I said, I think it would be a good idea if you went on a date with me.
You had a cider.
A cider.
Like a hard apple drink.
That's right.
That's
like 2000 for you, right? 2000, everybody, all the
everybody
ladies were
strong bowing it up.
Sipping on a cider. That was also like newly getting drunk Lennon.
Uh-huh.
So I wasn't a big drinker.
Now you're sucking on ciders.
Sucking on a cider, and getting going a little, over. Taking his leather cap.
You had a little leather
him,
cap?
Asking him out.
And what did he say?
He said, I think that would be a good idea.
Because he was shy and he was thinking about it.
And then, no, he said he hadn't thought of me that way, which I thought said was the wrong answer. But then he said that he had admired me.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, that's a good response.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started dating and that was it. That was literally it.
What do you mean? Had you dated other boys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Serious relationships?
Yeah. I mean, like the longest a year and a half probably.
Uh-huh.
And then break up and then get back together maybe.
With the same fella?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. More than once?
Yeah.
So you had like one serious thing in what, high school? Because you met this fella
college.
Pretty...
Young. Yeah, I had a serious boyfriend in college, like for like a year and a half, and then broke up and then got back together for a little while and then broke up again.
Mm-hmm.
And then just kind of dated and had boyfriends. And
mm-hmm. But nothing super serious.
And then I had a more serious when I was in Mississippi.
Oh.
Teaching for a little while. And then I moved to New York and that was over.
But none of them felt like this.
No.
This gentleman.
Mm-mm.
It just felt different.
Immediately. Yeah.
You're telling me immediately, leather hat, cider in the belly.
You know, not like I was like, oh, this is it for me forever. But I was like, this I'm not going to let this one get out of here.
Yes.
Without a hard fight.
Yes. Or a hard cider.
That's right. Let's have another cider. And then, you know, it was tricky because it was like every time we had a fight, I was like, oh, it's over. It's all over, you know, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Did he stick around? He's not the fleeing type?
No.
He's steady Eddie?
Yeah.
Deals with your shenanigans, your ups and your downs, your artistic weirdos?
We're pretty even flow.
He's a safe space.
Absolutely.
Calm
I would
space.
Say sanctuary.
He's a high thread couch top sheet.
If you like that sort of thing.
I love that sort of thing. Yeah. Jersey knit.
Yeah.
I'm in. He's a sanctuary.
Yeah.
Because he's not... So when he moved out here, he just got another principal job out here?
Yeah, it was... That was tricky because I was like... He had started a high school in Brooklyn.
He started
a high school, which is crazy hard to do.
Mm.
And of course, you feel crazy, you know... Strong ownership over that and loyalty to your kids and your staff and all of that stuff. What I like to know now, though, is that all like many of his teachers have gone on to be principals themselves. So it's sort of like a
farm system.
Yeah, really. And sort of the work that he did there is not lost. It will continue and it will affect a lot more kids now.
But he was conflicted.
Yes.
Leaving.
Yes.
You were conflicted.
Yes.
Hard to ask.
If he didn't want to go, I wouldn't have gone.
Is that right?
I would have continued to go back and forth, or I would have stayed more in New York. It wasn't worth it.
But he said
that he thought that we could move.
Really?
And then it's been really good.
He likes it.
He does like it. Good. He didn't think he would like it, but he does. He likes the outdoors.
Huh. So we're hiking.
He's running upstairs. He likes stairs. He runs up a lot of stairs. He does this thing called a stair climb, which is like in the tallest building in downtown LA.
I know that.
Yeah.
My bagger at Whole Foods does that.
Does he?
Yeah.
You have one bagger?
No, but you know, I go there enough. What's
you
up,
know
man?
The same guy.
I was like, nice calves. I was like, well, I don't think I said nice calves, but
he
did
but
tell
you
me.
You noticed.
I think, I buy so much fucking vegetables. He was like, do you juice? And I was like, yes. And he was like, me too.
He was hitting on you?
And, well, we fucked, but it wasn't emotional.
It was like a tie thing.
It was a tiny dick tie thing, which is what I call my own tiny tie dick.
Tiny dick, huge calves.
That's the name of the movie. He said, and you should tell your shy delight husband, that beet juice increases your endurance by something like 18% or something.
He hates beets.
Well, tell him to fucking... He can run
How much? 18%?
Listen to me. If endurance. You can discipline yourself to run up the stairs of the tallest building, you can throw down some beets.
I'll tell him.
And I'm not talking Dr. Dre. God, I love a bad joke. I love a bad joke. Dr. Dre coming in from the garden. Here's some beats by Dre. That's a fucking delight for me. That's a piece of cake.
Let the record show I'm holding my hair earphones.
Why?
Because you're afraid of the beats.
Oh.
Because of the beats.
So he's a sweet man, and he came here with you. All he wanted is a couple buildings to run up and no fucking red root vegetables.
Yes.
And he came, and you're not telling me a sad story of a guy who looks out the window and goes, why did I leave my school?
No.
No.
Now he has a school. It's an all-girls school in downtown L.A. called New Village Charter. Mm. It's 40% pregnant or parenting.
Whoa.
A lot of kids out of foster care system and or juvenile justice. So it's like a no joke. And he's like the perfect person to lead the school.
He's standing and delivering.
Yeah. In a lot of ways.
He's got a big heart.
Yes. And he's very good at what he does. And he's very good at leading and bringing people with him.
Strong guy.
Yeah.
So you and Jess St. Clair are all synced up and you're crying about your show. He goes, relax, and makes bread.
Sure.
Or does something.
Or just holds me.
Yeah. He's all muscly with
or like goes legs. And gets our favorite Cuban food or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So a good counterpart to your SNL dreaming, show writing, show running.
Perspective. But at the end of the day, like, if I didn't have him, all of it would feel really empty.
Hmm. That's lovely and harrowing. Because I'd love to say something like that. I think that's wonderful. Well, that's very sweet of you. And I believe that as well.
You will.
Having specific goals and whatnot.
You're a catch.
Nobody's ever said that on the show before.
I haven't said anything about it, but when you came in and you have a little bit of longer hair than I've seen you lately, it's very handsome.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
If I had a baby, it would be kicking.
Yeah.
That's very sweet, Lennon. Now I feel nice. Isn't it weird how we have the keys to some of the keys to some of people's happiness? Like we can help people and make them feel good and make them feel loved, make them feel safe.
Yes.
We have these little fucking, I like to picture a tiny little box and it's got green wrapping paper and a nice bow on it. We can give them to each other.
Yeah.
And we don't. We hold on to them all day. It doesn't have to be me, and that's very sweet, but that's a nice little gift, and I'm going to unwrap it. I'm going to keep the lid on, and I'm going to look at it again in the car with excitement, and then I'm going to look at it again tonight when I go to bed. It's going to make me feel
nice. If you can remember those moments all through your career or your life or whatever, you know, those tiny moments when you were like, oh, that felt warm, or holy shit, this is a kick-ass thing that's happening. You put them like in a little box for when shitty times are happening.
Yes.
And you can be like, oh, right, this is why I'm doing this, or this is that was a moment that I felt this goodness.
Yeah. And, you know, I talked to Brody Stevens about it. It's the idea that you can do that with your barista or the bagger at Whole Foods.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm not going to say that I'm always that way, but there are little things that we can be doing.
There's no reason to go through your day being a dick to everybody.
Yes. Or withholding little bits of joy. I've said it many times on the show, Chinese proverb about heaven and hell. Mm-hmm. Hell is everybody has these pool cues for chopsticks and they're trying to feed themselves and they can't, so they're all starving. Heaven is the same exact scenario, but everybody's feeding each other. Very short story. Very sweet. Worth repeating. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I have some more of the mushu pork?
You really want the mushu pork? Because that's the one with the whole wrapping system and the separate sauce and the vegetables. That's a very difficult thing to eat with chopsticks.
Anthony King also died with us, so he's also in Chinese heaven.
Oh.
Hey, Anthony.
Buddy.
Don't worry. Everyone he cares about and loves also died. So what a weird... But I'm trying to get everybody here.
Got a baby.
I know. I told Anthony emailed me and he told me something, something, something. I brought him up. What? How did I bring it up? I admitted to him that I had a married happy person prejudice. He helped me realize that.
Yeah.
That when people are happy, like I see his Facebook photos and they're smearing cake on each other's faces, and I'm like, what a dummy. That's literally the first thing that I think sometimes. It's because, you know, divorce, bitter, so a little bit, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Or I think, how could people be creative and pursue and be in the service of an industry that requires all of you?
Yeah.
And still get their husband to move to a different school. How could you do it?
Right.
More likely you don't move. More likely you end up fading away.
Maybe.
In your love and spooning and going, I wonder if I could have had a show.
Well, then it, yeah.
What? And then what? It would be better to have love? Is that what you're going to tell me?
Well, if it wasn't too much of a sack, if it wasn't, if you didn't feel like it was a sacrifice. I don't know. I'm just saying I wouldn't, like, if he hadn't, again, if he didn't want to come, I wouldn't have come.
Right. You know,
I would have figured out a way to do, I guess, what I want to do there.
Yes.
Because ultimately, if it was easier to leave him, then it wouldn't have been right.
Right.
That's what I meant.
Perfectly put.
Okay.
Here's a classic Pete Holmes overshare. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Go!
When I got divorced, so I was living in Sleepy Hollow, which is horrible.
New York.
Upstate New York.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically barely upstate, but yes, an hour and a half, depending on how you go. Uh-huh. My ex, when we were breaking up, pointed out that, because I wanted to live in the city, she didn't, and she said something that still kind of haunts me. She was like, if this was right, meaning her and I wouldn't mind living in the city for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and she said, she was like, if this new guy, because she was with a new guy, wanted to live in the city, I would do it for him.
Uh-huh.
And like, that sounds mean. She didn't say it in a mean way.
No.
She said it in a way to help me kind of understand, like, look, if we were like gaga right for each other, who cares where we live? I'll live wherever you are.
Right.
Baby cakes.
Right.
But she wasn't baby caking me.
Right. And vice versa, how would you have felt? Were you ready to go to Barcelona for her?
No. Fucking A, right?
Yeah.
If she was like, I want to go live in Alaska, which she would. She'd love like a, maybe not Alaska.
Frigid environment.
To match her disposition. But if she wanted, she would have loved to live in Maine. And I would have delayed. If she put that bill on the desk, the marriage presidential desk, I would have delayed it. I would have buried it in paperwork. These days, I would be like, no, sorry, that's just never going to happen. I'm not going to live in Maine. But back then, I wouldn't have been brave enough to say that.
Well, there's also that part of the relationship where you're figuring shit out and you say, these are the things I want. These are the things I want. And hopefully they match up. And if they don't, then you maybe need to think about it.
Right.
You know, like, do you want to have kids or...
Right, big one. Or live in the country.
Yeah. Or live near your family or...
Right. That's another big one.
Never work.
Right. Yeah. Go to Barcelona for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Barcelona. Good relationship stuff, Len. Good job.
You're great.
No.
You really did it.
You did it. Well, we have one more topic. And usually it just comes up. But
we can't talk about it for very long, right?
No, we don't have a time limit. I have a...
Nobody's going to want to listen to... They've already turned it off.
Some people have turned it off. That's true.
But the people are...
We have to be okay with that.
All right, fair enough.
It's a free show.
Fair enough. That's true. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
We don't have to refund any money. Nope. I'm fine with it.
All right, God. Go.
You go. Let's take the D off God and go.
Go. Oh,
how were you raised?
United Methodist.
Nice. Crystal Methodist. Just free associating.
What is that from? I don't know what that is.
Crystal Methodist?
Yeah.
Like crystal meth?
Oh, got it.
Mm-hmm. Breaking God. It's about a crystal Methodist addict. This is bad.
Is it really?
No, that was Breaking Bad is about a crystal meth distributor.
I am like 7,000 pieces behind you right now.
I know. I can feel that.
Sorry.
You don't watch Breaking Bad?
I do.
Okay, then it was just an ungettable joke.
Sorry.
Tell me where you are now. I'm more interested in that. I know you do TM. I'm surprised we didn't talk about that for 8 hours. By the way, I asked you and Jess St. Clair if you guys ever like trip out or have like epiphanies or like profound spiritual experiences. And I'm not saying this like I'm doing it better, but I do. And you told me that you don't.
No.
You don't? You still don't?
Mm-mm.
I think you should go harder. Do it longer.
I did you still do just 20? Meditate with David Lynch.
You did?
Not too long ago.
How'd that go?
Great. We were almost knee to knee.
Is that right?
My husband, it's through my husband's school that we learned because the David Lynch Foundation.
Oh, they teach all the at-risk youth.
They taught my husband's school and all the teachers and he and him. And then I saw him learning. We're talking about transcendental meditation. Mm-hmm. And I saw the difference in how he was dealing with his stress
mm-hmm.
and the weight that it was taking on his shoulders and stuff. And how it was immediately relieved when he would meditate. And so I was like, oh, that would be good for me and Jess before mm-hmm. we write. And because Jess has these migraines and other stuff. And so I was like, it would be good for her and it would help me work with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had our first initial session. And the woman who taught us, Lynn Kaplan,
talked about
the different stressors that we carry in our life. And one of the things that she said was the chronic illness of a parent, which I have a dad who was on dialysis for multiple years and just got a kidney transplant in October and is doing great.
Oh, I was just going to say, he's still
doing going. Great. Yeah. With my aunt's kidney, mom's sister's kidney.
Wow.
Crazy. But when she said that, I like burst into tears and I was like, oh, I could benefit from this as well. There's a lot of stuff that that's not maybe everyday occurrence. I don't have like a physical migraine or whatever, but I'm definitely carrying a bunch of shit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we learned almost 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What's your mantra?
Uh-uh.
That's a simple one.
Uh-uh
would work.
It would.
Just do uh-uh.
Sanskrit word uh-uh means
if you're broke just do uh-uh. I told my mom just to say Jesus, she wouldn't do it. Go on.
Don't tell people to meditate the wrong way.
Why?
You think they'll get it in their beeswax that it's a terrible thing.
Oh yeah, no, I just really wanted my mom to do it and I was afraid that the whole like singing in Sanskrit would turn her off because she's churchy.
You don't have to sing in Sanskrit.
That's all the whole ceremony.
I don't remember that.
You have to bring
it's
a
like
handkerchief.
Pain. I don't remember it.
You bring a flower
that
you
like. Yeah,
you
bring fruit and flower.
A fruit for Maharishi to
but
eat.
Do we have to sing?
No. Lynn sings.
Yeah, sure.
In Sanskrit. So I picture my mother.
Oh, like bailing
churchy,
on that part?
Being
but
like,
you're already 5 days in and you've already written the check.
Fair enough. You'll listen to a lot of Sanskrit ditties if you paid that money.
Yeah.
That's true. So
no,
go on.
But it was the first one, my first meditation was really amazing.
Your first time?
Yeah.
Out of the gate?
Yeah.
I remember my first one being good too, but you had amazing, mine wasn't amazing.
I remember it being really healing and yeah.
With Lynn in the room, in that little room, in that chair.
She left. Uh-huh.
I wonder if she left. Go on.
Yeah. But yeah, so we both... So Jess and I learned at the same time, and then we would take breaks during our writer's room
to
go meditate, and mm-hmm. It was like we wouldn't have gotten through it without it. Don't think because we just need you just feel really refreshed afterwards, and like you have another several hours in you.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I'm so glad you told me about it. I'm grateful for that and my voodoo
movement. I'm glad you like it.
I love it. You should try doing it longer. Go for 40.
No.
It's great.
I'm not interested.
Maharishi did it all day.
I know, but that was, I don't know, he's further along.
Don't you want to get
way
there?
Further along.
We're just 40 minutes.
I'm okay with what I'm getting from it now.
I don't like that answer.
So I was sitting across from David Lynch, and he said, he did a question and answer session after we meditated together, and someone asked him like a question about going deep or blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, what's it supposed to feel like?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it doesn't matter what it feels like. It's that you're doing it. So you could have a real rocky one where you can't keep the mantra. You have all of these crazy
sure.
thoughts.
That's what Lynn says. They're all good ones.
The next one, you feel like you're going. He said there was a study done on two girls, same meditation time, 20 minutes. They did EKGs or whatever on their brain cells. And then they both went under, you know, both meditated for 20 minutes and one came out and was like, oh, I, you know, had these amazing dreams and felt like I transcended, da, 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 da. The other woman was like, I couldn't remember my mantra. Like, was thinking about the groceries I needed to get, all this stuff. But the same amount of lighting up, the same amount of transcending, the same amount of touching down. So it doesn't matter what it feels like. It's that you do it.
Yeah, I love it. That's so great. You should do it longer.
You should do it longer.
I will.
Do it shorter.
Whoa. Okay. Maybe. No, never.
Salsa, Caesar, full fries.
You know what you got to do? Just do it and don't time yourself. That's fun.
Oh, yeah. No. A lot of times I go over.
You do go over.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
But I mean, not on purpose. I'm not like going to sit down for like a 40 minute.
Have you ever gone 40 minutes?
Probably, but I would have fallen asleep probably.
Really?
Yeah.
So where's God in all this?
I don't think about God as connected to this.
Do you think about God at all?
Yeah.
What's their deal? What is God's deal? Are you censoring your idea? You have some weird, wild idea that you don't want to tell me.
No, I'm not censoring. I'm just trying to think like what I think and how to put it into non-drawings. I don't know.
God is the rain.
I don't know. I feel like there is a larger being that we're all connected with.
Do you feel we're all connected? Is that part of your belief?
Yeah.
Sort of a unity, we're all in this together.
Yes. Which is why I don't understand when people are assholes or kill each other.
Or withhold the little gifts we were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we like love. We're pro-love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are we feeling judged? Are we worried about sin in our lives?
Not really.
Are we worried about judgment?
No, but I mean, I'm pretty good. You know what I mean? Like
you don't really do that much bad stuff.
I try to be kind. I try to move through the world in a non-selfish way. Take what I need and
love your neighbor.
Yeah,
that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Not where. How do we feel about death?
I don't think about it really.
Really?
Well, I'll change that. I'll say sometimes I'm like walking down the street and I'm like, what if I got shot in the back of the head with a stray bullet right now?
That's a good one.
And that freaks me out. But then that's it.
But then I realized, and I want to broaden my own spiritual questioning, that a lot of my fear and a lot of my interest in spirituality comes from a fear of judgment after death, which I actually think in the reading that I've been doing now is shallow and not that interesting to me anymore, and not a very good investigation. I'm interested in, what we're supposed to be doing with our lives, how we can create heaven here, like we were saying with the chopsticks, telling people that their hair looks nice, and how we can create hell here as well. Being withholding, being an asshole, being a real piece of shit, you know, cutting people off and stealing and lying and all that sort of stuff. That creates disharmony with people. So when you don't think about death, that actually seems kind of nice. It sounds like you're pretty present.
Yeah.
You're not worried about heaven or hell or any sort of later.
No, I mean, when I think about like getting shot in the back of the head.
Yes.
I'm not interested in dying right now.
Yes.
Because like I said, we both have a lot of, we're not done.
We got stuff to do.
Got a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah.
But I mainly think about like how, what would happen around me? Like, would Jessica keep doing our show, you know, like how would she recast
that's
me?
That's interesting.
What would my husband do, you know, if the, like, he would take care of the baby by himself and it would be like that sad movie that with that British man. I mean, you know, that, like, those are the kind of things I think about. I don't think about the afterlife. I don't think about like where I go.
You're thinking outwardly. You're thinking about other people.
Yes.
How refreshing for me. Very nice. Good God answer. Want to play a game?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we'll play a game. Which game should we play, Katie? Sing to a pop song you don't know? That's fun for an improviser. I just play a pop song that you've never heard and you just sing?
Yes, I'll do that.
Yeah, 100%. I knew you'd love that one. What are the other games? Oh, I asked you the last thing you Googled. that sort of stuff. We're going to do pop song.
What if it's a pop song? What if I know it?
Well, we have. I'm going to go on Spotify right now, who's not one of our sponsors. And it's in my opinion, it's helpful. I'm going to do Natalie
Imbruglia?
Not Imbruglia. Torn. No. What? Who am I thinking? Oh, Nora Jones. Because it's helpful if it's like a slower song.
Okay.
So you can get a shot. If it was like a rap, I think it would be really hard.
Yeah,
it would be. But hard. I want you to be good at it. And you take a verse, and then I'll take a verse, and can sing the chorus together. So Nora Jones. And then you can pick the name of the song. Oh, she's not on Spotify. Oh, no. I spelled it wrong.
On Spotify or Pandora?
Okay, Little Broken Hearts is the album. We got Good Morning, Say Goodbye, Little Broken Hearts, She's 22, Take It Back, After the Fall.
She's 22.
She's 22 is now playing.
Uh-huh.
So you go when she starts singing.
Afternoons in the melon field. Caroline thinks about the day she spent with her stuffed panda bear. Loving it. She doesn't have a lot of friends, but she's still a happy person.
Can you hear it okay? Because it sounds real bad.
Yeah, it sounds real. It sounds real.
How do we make it not sound so shitty?
No, I think it's. I think it's.
She's a happy person.
I think it's like really distorted. Yeah, like this sounds like a normal. I just sing over Nora Jones, right?
No, you're trying to sing what she's singing.
Oh, I'm not making.
I like what you were doing.
You didn't give me the rules.
This sounds like shit too.
Here, open up my computer.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, here you go. We leave it all in. We leave all the shit in. You know what I mean? Because that's what life is. She's 22. Just
You've
do
done Nora Jones before?
No, we've done Sarah McLachlan a lot.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was going to do a tweet about Sarah McLachlan. And
what was that?
Sometimes I think in the shower, I'm like, this would be the greatest tweet ever. And then I, like, really wouldn't.
Do you want to do Traveling On?
Traveling On.
Sure.
What album is this from? Okay, because I know one of her albums.
I'm trying to sing what she's singing.
Yeah.
Not make up new awesome lyrics.
I love your interpretation of it, but you are trying to sing with her.
Okay. You could never be a face in the crowd. So you travel on. Traveling on. Well, you don't know the same cloud. You're traveling on you.
Oh,
hey.
I'm changing you mind.
I'm so strong.
But now
I'm talking too much about to
I'm traveling. Ooh,
oh. Can't believe what's happening now.
Can't believe what's happening now.
If you're not
I'm taking my time
in all way.
And
so come away with me.
I'm not enjoying going.
I'll keep traveling on
you. I got one.
Hey.
Don't
be
too hard on yourself.
Don't this place
words now. I can't believe it.
It's happening.
Cause I'm Will you name your baby Nora?
Maybe.
Ooh. Thought for sure you'd just say no.
I'll put it on the list.
What else is on the list?
We have like a really long list. It's a lot of pressure to name a child for the rest of their lives.
Can I tell you something that my friends did?
What did they do?
They waited a little bit, so it's born, and then they get to know it. Yeah. So if you have like a top two, you're like, this isn't a Nora.
Yeah.
This is a Kelly Jane.
That's the plan. Narrow it down to like three.
And wearing mascara.
Kelly Jane.
You know, if it's kind of white trashy.
Sure.
Little baby Paps.
Or like a Crystal.
Crystal Brittany. What is Jane on there? Wait, what is on there?
Oh, just a bunch. I have my list and he has his and then we'll see what she looks like. And
I believe it. Congrats.
Go from there.
Go from there. That's another game. You have to say keep it crispy at the end. That's what you say to end the episode.
Oh, I have to say it?
But you just reminded me we should do fake laugh into real laugh and then say keep it crispy.
Okay.
So we're going to fake laugh. And when it turns into a real laugh,
Okay. You
raise your hand.
Okay. And you're going to do the same?
We do it together.
We do it at the same time.
And then when
time.
We stop laughing, mm-hmm. real or fake, you say keep it crispy and then the show will be done.
Okay.
Ready?
I don't want it to be over.
I know. It's like a canoe ride. Everyone loves a long canoe. Ready?
Yeah.
Mine's been real the whole time.
This baby fucking comes shooting out of me. You are in trouble.
The face you're making.
Keep it crispy, guys.
Yeah! Hot dogs.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.